Call to order the January 31st, 2019 Mount Pleasant Town Council advance, as Councilman Overbrook has. It's an advance. Appreciate everybody being here. I hope you enjoyed the food. I want to thank our staff for taking care of everything, taking good care of us today. Everybody knows we will do lunch around noon wherever we are in the agenda. We will take a break and do that. I want to welcome some guests here. I know that Brett Jonas from Charleston Regional Development Alliance is here. Appreciate that. I'm glad you're here. And if there's anybody on this, don't know. But anyway, good to have you. And so the next order of business, item two, is public comments. Anyone from the public want to make some comments? All right, seeing none, we will move on to item number three, review of the five-year budget projections. Would that be you, Mayor?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mayor.
We also appreciate the overview you gave us as we prepared for this meeting, being sort of analogous to the big game this Sunday between the Saints and the Chiefs that we're all looking forward to.
Yes.
Thank you for giving it to us in the football.
You're very welcome. Thank you and good morning. In front of you is the, well, almost in front of you, is the five-year budget projections. And we thought the information we're about to provide, mostly through PowerPoint and some discussion, is a good header into your visioning discussion. So, but the idea is that we're going to be real brief going through this. Obviously, we'll stop and answer any questions that you have as long as you need. But we don't want to spend too much time with the staff documents so that you have time for your business. So five-year financial plan, it's excellent information for us going forward, helps us to shape priorities based on the funding that's available. As I mentioned, we moved through rather quickly. We are showing revenues that go up for the five-year period, also some major expenditures that we know are likely and are coming our way. We categorize our revenues into mostly the three that you see here, property taxes, along with sales taxes. They tend to be relatively stable. And then we have more economically sensitive revenues like the business license tax and the building permit fees that I'll talk about here in a minute, as well as the SCENG franchise fee that I'd sent an email out sometime in the past. But lower energy bills are great, but we're also getting less money as a result of those bills. So here's how it breaks out. This is the revenue side over the next 5 years. I mentioned we categorize, you see the categories, the revenue categories down the left-hand side. And can you all see the red line? Okay. Property and other taxes, that's our ad valorem taxes, it's a sales tax. And we expect this category to remain relatively solid over the five-year period, anticipating about a 3% growth. Next category tells a little bit of a different story. That's licenses and permits. That's your building permits. That's your business licenses. And in the second column, fiscal year 2020, we're reflecting the decrease in money that we receive as part of our franchise with SCENG. And we estimate that to be anywhere from $700,000 to $900,000 of a decrease that is going to be that way going forward for us. So we see a correction in 2020. And then relatively flat moving forward in business licenses and permits, about a 0.5% growth there. Our grants, mostly federal government, we expect to remain the same. Intergovernmental, it's a local government fund. It's the 1% Uber statewide franchise. It's money for SROs. It's accommodations tax revenue received. And that's relatively stable but healthy. Charges for services, recreation fees, inspection fees, about stable, about 1%, 2%. Fines and forfeitures, very difficult to catch, we find, every year. It's subject to decisions that come out of the South Carolina Supreme Court. Latest decision, I think you're aware of, is that we can no longer try those who can't actually be present. And so that slows down that part of the court process, lowers our fees a little bit. And keep in mind, for every dollar that is collected through the court, 66 cents goes to the state of South Carolina and not to the town of Mount Pleasant. Interest earnings, we see a dip over time. You may say, well, we expect interest rates to go up, and that is so, but the amount of money we have to invest because of capital projects being built is expected to stabilize or go down, which will lower that number. Rents and royalties, these are things like Alhambra Hall, sale of assets, old police cruisers, old fire trucks, and some other revenues. So what we're looking at overall is a 2% growth rate over 5 years. Results in close to $1.5 million to $1.6 million a year in new growth, brand new growth.
Eric, can you come back one minute?
Sure.
30 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
All right, thank you.
Good, sir?
Yes,
sir. Okay. And here are anticipated expenditures, things that we know about. Employee compensation, just a general number, is $31 million. That's our payroll. So 1% of that is $310,000. So if you're looking at, say, a 3% or 4% pay increase for employees every year, if you were interested in doing something like that, that's $1.2 million. So recall we have 1.5, 1.6 coming in every year, and the possibility of 1.2 or somewhere in that vicinity going out every year in compensation for employees. You know about our mandated increase, state retirement, that's $320,000. Health insurance, we expect about $500,000 a year. And then we've promised employees that every 5 years we would do a compensation and classification study where we measure, we gauge the environment for employment around to make sure that we're paying fairly and at market rates. Growth-driven services, town grows, services are necessary to pay for them, and can't get the pointer to work. The fire department strategic plan, that is generally unfunded. With this year's budget, you passed enough money for four new firefighters. And you'll see coming up shortly, the mid-year budget will include two new firefighters. That'll give us six. The strategic plan for the fire department calls for at least 20 new firefighters. What six does is it allows us to put four men and women on a ladder truck. And so that's helpful to us. That takes a bite out of the strategic plan, but doesn't get us as far as is called for in the fire department strat plan. You know there's been a lot of discussion about stormwater, and the cost of $30 million would represent three projects. We know that our citizens have strong expectations for recreation and public services, and then we have to maintain our quality of life and our assets in our building. So we're seeing the anticipated expenditures that the new growth will be eaten up almost entirely and then some with expenditures. You know what the balancing options are. That is, if you have priorities in excess of what we do today, there's the millage increase. And let me stop here at the property tax reassessment. 2021, the county will do their reassessment. And so this provides you an opportunity, if you wanted to seize it, provides you an opportunity to capture some tax revenue here. This is 2021. In other words, we know that the overall pie, the value of property in the town of Mount Pleasant, is going to go up with reassessment. That has been the economic conditions here. That wouldn't surprise many people at all. If you kept your tax rate where it is today, on the larger pie, you'd get more tax revenue there to do that. In the past, we have lowered it some, but not made it revenue neutral when there have been prior reassessments. So council's been able to capture some increment of the increase in value throughout town. There's always new revenue fees, and then there's the other side where we can reduce expenditures, phase in programs, defer projects, or reduce levels of service. That is always an option. Real quickly, this is just a timeline. In March, you'll be getting the proposed budget, and we hope to have it approved by May. And that is the discussion on the 5 years. Happy to answer any questions.
Any questions?
Yes.
When Dominion takes over for SDSU, is their franchise fee on?
It'll still be 5%, which is the max, and we're working on those legal documents right now.
Okay. And short-term, we have a program for short-term rentals that will be coming into being here hopefully shortly. Were those fees and everything included in this?
Yes, sir, but we also will have a corresponding expenditure. We figure that when the fees come in, that it will require at least one employee to have to manage it. So we recognize it, but we don't recognize it as a substantial revenue improvement.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman. Eric, can you go back?
Okay.
Talking to Tom as well over here. We think there's opportunities for recreation to be able to increase our revenue. There's a lot of good ideas up there. I know that Tom has a lot of good ideas as well and flies around the country helping other communities be able to increase their recreation and get revenue from their recreation. So I want to concentrate a little bit more on seeing what we can do through recreation to be able to increase our revenues here that may be able to help some of the other areas of the town, whether it's the police or the fire, through recreation initiatives, whether it's having fields that we'll be able to rent out to people and teams that want to come in or things like that. But I want to take a good look at that to see if there's opportunities for us to increase our revenues through recreation to be able to help some of the other areas of the town.
Yes, sir. I would say, sir, love to work on that type of initiative. I'm not aware of any and do not see a path where increases in recreation fees will be able to, one, support the recreation services, and two, go as far as to be able to support other services of the town.
I'm not talking about increasing fees. I'm talking about increasing recreation infrastructure to attract more, whether they're tournaments or whether they're people using our facilities, renting our facilities, leasing our facilities, or just looking at that and see how we can do it. There are other areas around the state that are doing it, that are doing fantastic. I think Tom can speak to it a lot better than I can, but I want to bring it up now to make sure we're on the record saying I want to look at the opportunity to increase our infrastructure and recreation so that we can produce more revenue out of it. Not so much increase the fees, but increase the use of our facilities where we generate more revenue.
Can I say a couple things on that? I think that currently, and in the past, the Recreation Department has had a philosophy of doing everything they can to take care of the residents that live here. And they've done a great job of that, a really great job of that. The discussion has to be if we want to change our philosophy. Because right now, recreation is not a lot of pleasant. Do we want it to be good? And if we do, there can't be an infrastructure bill designated. The state's done. It will enable us to then get that. But today, there's a product. The product's good. Our residents like it. Now, like I said before, I mean, there are definitely ways to raise money through that. But it would have to take change in infrastructure, change in what we do, and a funding philosophy with cost recovery benchmarks in there to get us to where we need to be. The days of governments getting more tax money for parks and recreation are gone. They're gone. And so what communities are doing is they're figuring out how can they raise the money to offset the things that they do. And I'm just a victim of where I work, and I was in Charles County Parks. We didn't get any tax dollars. So we've raised every single thing we had to raise ourselves. But we're raising, you know, $21 million a year, right, all over from that. So I think that it's possible, but we're not going to sit here today and say, let's add this, let's add that. I think it's going to be an entire discussion on whether or not the staff or the town or the council has an appetite to change what recreation is in the town.
I agree. Look at these numbers. I think this is the time to do that.
Yeah, I have another comment on a couple of things.
Sure.
Thank you. This is really good. And I know Marcy's fingerprints are on this.
Yeah, absolutely.
So thanks to Marcy as well. But this is so good for us to see, and not only see, but feel. And what you said with all those numbers is like, we got to make some decisions. Because in 5 years, we don't have enough money to pay the bills. So it's good to know 4 years ahead of time so that we can start making these. It's better to make smaller adjustments than to show up in 5 years and say, okay, tax rate increase and all this other stuff. So I really appreciate this, and I'm glad that we're looking down the road there. But it's going to take us. We got to do something, because that's real. And every single one of us wants more stuff. You know, we all would like to see more things, but this is just that we keep the same level of service. And so I don't have all the answers, but I'm happy that I'm around this table, because I think we've got some smart people to be able to figure it out, and certainly smart staff that pull our hand. But without this, we can't even have this discussion, quite frankly. So I really appreciate this. One question, and I know that I'm going to talk to everybody right now, but what are your thoughts as far as, like, how do we make this, how do we keep the revenues up to our expenses that will grow?
Sure. First, thank you for your comments, Mr. O'Rourke. I should first start by saying that I believe that we can operate. We can keep the same level of service within this amount of money for the next 5 years. It's the next thing that is the straw that can break the camel's back, if you will. And that's what I'm most concerned about. I think reassessment is a real opportunity. I think without a question, if it's council's desire to really enter the stormwater field in a big way, like is what's being designed, we've got to fund it. We just have to fund it. I know it's uncomfortable, but it's, if we're going to get into this space and do what we think's right, because the help isn't coming from somewhere else. It's just not. I plan to talk about that in a few minutes. So we're fine. We can operate for 5 years just like this on this and manage through it. It's the next items. And what we have, which is great, is we have a community that wants more, and a lot of us are in this business because we want to help and we want to provide, we want to build community. It's wonderful. But it's reaching a point where we just can't support all the requests that are coming our way.
And this is a question that everybody's sitting around this table. Do we have an appetite maybe to say and explain to the public it costs 3% more every year to do business and equate that to what they're paying us in taxes and look at not a tax increase but a business funding plan that includes tax increases? I spoke at the Senior Center Christmas, whatever the heck it was, and it was so funny because I said, I'm going to talk about taxes, and they're going to kick me out of the room. And because they don't want any tax increases. But I started to explain what our tax rate was compared to all of them, which we pay less. I went to City of Charleston, to North Charleston, everything else, and the services we get here. And they're not paying. And so I started, and I said to them, I said, you know, you all want pickleball courts, you want a therapeutic swimming pool next to something with hot water, you want this or that. I said, there's no money for that. Would you pay $10 more? And then everyone was like, yep, I'll do that. So, but when we generically say, I'm going to raise your taxes, everybody goes crazy. But if you explain it, if you explain where we are compared to everybody else in this entire region, they're getting a deal like we would not believe. And we funded our growth. We've cut the growth like we said we were going to do. Look, I'll stand up and take every bullet for a tax increase before I go, if you want me to. I understand that. But I think that it's we should at least have a discussion at some point on getting more money from the people that live here. When we explain to them what they're paying for Mount Pleasant taxes, not all taxes, it's half the school board.
If I may, it's 8:52 and the media's in the room. I think a live tweet probably just went out.
I love it.
Mount Pleasant considering drastic tax increases.
No, Tom, we're considering drastic tax increases. I'm okay if you write that.
I'll remind everybody and the media and everybody, this is a kind of a blue sky visioning thing about what might happen. These are not proposals coming from the committee. This is not something we're voting on today.
Crazy conversation.
This is Tom doing that Tom thing, thinking out loud, with the rest of the room.
I'm okay with all that.
So, Mr. Ellen, do you have anything?
Thank you, Mayor. You know, nobody loves recreation more than I do. And I've been involved in our recreation department probably well over 50 years. You know, Gary and I started playing ball when we were about 6 years old. He's a lot older than I am. But, you know, whether it was by participant or as a coach or as a parent, I still have two kids in the recreation department in soccer and also volleyball. So that's a long time. That's most of my life. But as far as the town requirements and needs are concerned, we have to prioritize. And if you can go back to the revenue portion of the slide.
Is this it, sir?
The increase.
The increase. Let's see. That was. Oh.
Yes.
That one, yes, sir.
Yeah, the revenue increases. It gives us options about how to get there. And that's something that's got to be invested in time by staff and by this council to come up with ways where we can come to grips for our community, our town, our citizens that is amenable to those increases. But the biggest and single most important issue right now for this town, from my perspective, is stormwater remediation. Countywide, in the Tri-County area, there are task forces all over this county trying to cobble together resources to investigate what they need to do for their own stormwater remediation. And I applaud this council for having the foresight to start the process very early on, whether it was for the study of the old village and the design and having the work done at State Farm, getting it done for the old village and Popcall. These projects are looming. We have an aged stormwater system that's going to require repair and replacement over time. You know, Steve Farm is not that old. We've had places in off of 41 in Rivertown that we've had some repairs done to. So this is going to be an ongoing process. We have a countywide intergovernmental flood prevention task force. So this is really a single issue for the town to consider. And although I think we are ahead of the curve, we don't have the funding or the resources at this point in time to make the repairs and replacement that's needed in an aged system. So we really have got to roll up our sleeves and try to get to the point. And I certainly look forward to further discussions and how we're looking at cobbling the funds together to pay for some of these. And if it's through millage increases, the public needs to know that we have problems in our community that affect not only them, but also their future ages. And it really depends on whether or not the infrastructure can be satisfied in this town to ensure that their quality of life doesn't suffer. And so I look forward to the discussions as we go on today about how we come up with ways of cobbling funds together, resources, and increasing existing fees, whatever it is we need to do. But we need to be open and transparent with the citizens of the town of Mount Pleasant. And they need to know that we're working hard for them. Thank you.
Earlier I said to Councilman O'Rourke that I thought about today quite a bit, as a lot of us, I'm sure all of us have. And I was like, boy, I could really shock everybody by coming to this meeting and listening the whole time and not saying a word. But based on what's been presented, I feel I do need to say something. And, of course, you'll know where it's coming from based on the committees I serve on. But on the list of revenue increases, if I tried to figure out where the big picture visionary thing that I have in mind, that I feel a lot of people have in mind, where it fits. It could be an increase existing fees, but not where we increase them, where existing fees go up and not because we increase them. And there's another category that's not even on there. So so what I'm going to say real quickly is that it's impossible, I think, to do a cogent job of presenting 5 years projections if you have no history to look to or point to. And I don't think we have a history to look to or point to that really says what this council can accomplish in the next several years together. And what I mean by that is we just did something that we, a lot of us, if not all of us, have been thanked for greatly, which is we did something real to slow residential growth. Now, Councilman Bustos did a great job. I'll try to keep this succinct because this is a big vision thing, but Councilman Bustos did a great job of sharing why every single home and property that's built to live in ends up costing the town money because of all the services we provide. But that's not true of businesses. And so when we attract great employers and it accomplishes multiple things, it accomplishes things like a company like Gear Logistics, who when they came to town 4 years, 5 years ago, had counted their employees in the tens. Now they count them in the hundreds. They had 4,500 square feet of space. Now they have 22,000 in two locations. And I'm not even going to talk about their revenue because that's private information. But the numbers are huge, and we get a business permit fee, we get property taxes, and I don't mean we, the council, the town of Mount Pleasant. So if we can take that as one of the models that we're all very familiar with and say, what if we could get 10 geologistics-type companies in the next several years? What if that was the goal? And what if we could take those blades of grass that might have gone to residential, but now we've given it time to breathe and we've given it time for us to say, let's recruit big, great companies. And you know what happens, and this will be my last sentence? What happens is you not only raise a lot of revenue that way, but you also shorten car trips. You also keep a whole lot of our young people, especially millennials and Gen Zers, but other people too, older folks too, on this side of the bridge. And you also provide the businesses and services that our folks need. So let's just kind of keep that in our mind as we're looking at visionary things, because I'm not necessarily in the camp at all that we need to raise taxes to make all these things happen. I think we have another direction. Thank you.
Ms. Berman and Mr. Schmidt.
Had some really good comments today. One thing I think is missing from the revenue increase side is, you know, for years I think we as a town have had a certain standard that we try to accomplish in terms of quality of life. And when we couldn't get support from the state or the county, we sort of, our approach was, let's do it ourselves. And that's worked pretty well for us, but I think going forward, we really need to focus on leveraging services with our partners, with the county, with the state. Our folks just don't pay Mount Pleasant taxes. They pay taxes to the county and to the state. And I'm not sure that we're getting our fair share back, especially being the fourth largest municipality in the state. We probably have more leverage than we exercise with the county and the state. So I think we need to take a look at where can we partner. You know, our biggest priority project is funded now because of a county-wide tax, Highway 41. There may be other things that we need here that we may need to partner with and leverage our influence to get some of those outside dollars into Mount Pleasant instead of trying to drive it all by ourselves. So I think that's an area that we can grow. I had another thought. There you go.
We got all day, so Mr. Schmidt.
Yes, sir. Two years ago, we had a 1950s town hall, and everything worked great, and people thought town services were great. Today, we have a 2050 town hall. People still think services are great, and that everything's great. The people that live here, town does a good job. My question is, do we really need that 2050 town hall sitting basically 20-30% empty while we have revenue problems? One of the things I looked at was fire department suite up there. And I don't single them out, just it's easy because they have a closed suite and a set square footage. It's easy to track. That could be leased out for $80,000 a year. It's two firefighter salaries almost. You know, pretty much around the whole country, there's very few places with Class A office space for their fire chiefs. Most of the time, they're in a fire station. I think our chiefs could do a great job in a fire station, as well as they're doing in town hall. And that's just one department. I call it the Humpty Dumpty area where they have the display. Not to put down whoever did that display, but that was a big area in town hall across from our mailboxes that sits empty. And as my two colleagues to my left here were just speaking, I realized, you know, that space could be used for economic development. Hey, you want to relocate to Mount Pleasant? Come relocate here for 5 years. We got a ready-made space for you. And you charge them. And the town makes that money to make up these revenue losses in between here. And Bob's talking about partnering with other government agencies. You know, the motor vehicle office we have in town is horrific. We've outgrown it. Lease the space to the motor vehicle department. Let people come to town hall and go to motor vehicle up on the third floor. I don't see how these are such crazy ideas, but the question is, do we need that 2050 or 2100 scale town hall to sit empty? You know, I'm not saying anybody needs to be kicked out of there, but there are other places where these same jobs can be performed. And if it comes down to laying people off or having a nice office, I guarantee you, people would be happy to give up the office that to see staff was cut in the future. So that's just one. It's just one opportunity. There's other places as well where the town could lease things out. I don't know what the Darby building, in the grand scheme of the town, could that be repurposed for some type of revenue through Tom's ideas with recreation? Because it all comes back to me. We went through a 3 or 4 month exercise with the fire department, and there wasn't one part of it where I say, we're good. It was always, you know, we're close to, we're pushing it here on the engines, we're pushing it here on the trucks, we're pushing it here on the number of stations. It's one tragedy away from really a huge, huge issue. And I consider it a huge issue ahead of time, maybe everywhere else doesn't, but when that headline comes, they're going to be looking back at those committee minutes and saying, wow, you should have known. And for the fire department to be competing with other revenue sources, you know, I feel a responsibility to come up with an answer. And one of my answers is, let's look at leasing out parts of town hall for the time being. It was obviously overbuilt for what we needed, and there's obviously space in there. It's revenue just waiting to grab. And the it can be used for these other priorities that people are mentioning as well. Thank you.
Mr. Burrow. I got it now. So we do have a lobbyist that we pay down to be in Columbia to advocate for us. But you know, to be honest, my only exposure to that, those folks is the report that we get every now and then that says, here's what's going on in Columbia. And I think maybe it's time for us to take a look at our lobbying efforts and see whether we're getting anything from that, quite honestly, and whether we need to have a different strategy. Because the size town we are and the influence that we have, we should have in the state. I don't think it's being utilized. And I think if we had a stronger presence in Columbia, maybe a stronger lobbying influence with county, or at least better, stronger relationships with county, we might be able to exercise that leverage into some more dollars there. So I think that's one avenue that we can take a look at in terms of bringing more money back into the town that folks are paying. Thanks.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
If I may, sir, in response to some of the comments, which are wonderful, there's no question that it's public dollars. We should be looking under every rock that's available to us. But I'd say what we really have is more of a structural problem, an issue. And it's sort of like if someone has a job and they get paid, say, $50,000, but they spend $65,000 or need to spend $65,000, then they need to make some structural changes if they're going to accomplish that and spend that. And cutting out a trip to Starbucks once a week isn't going to get them there. And so while all ideas are good and they're important, for example, the additional firefighters that are going to be required is going to be $1 million. $1 million a year forevermore. And that is going to take substantial revenue to be able to handle that. That includes all their benefits, their fringes, everything that you know about. And so I just say in closing that this is a structural issue that has to be handled at the core. And while there's so many other things that can help us get there and nibble around the edges, I think there needs to be a bigger solution, if I may.
Mr. Garrett, are you going to be addressing these revenue increases and the deficiencies that we're at through the departments that are asking and requiring more, such as public service with stormwater fees or stormwater program? Are you going to address that later today?
No, sir. We had specifically not included that in the agenda, thinking that would be best left to the current process, which is committee and council.
Okay.
Don't have any intention of continuing that conversation here anyway today. Of course, if during the conversation later it was yours and council's desire to do so, we're ready and can do that.
Okay. Thank you.
Several things I think we need to work on and look at. One is state assistance with flooding. You know, Governor Master has a new commission on flooding, headed by Tom Mulligan, who is a good friend of the town of Mount Pleasant, the student for the bridge run, and comes here quite often. And Bobby Wright, we need to increase our presence with that committee, with the governor's office, with the legislature, and everybody knows that not one member of the state legislature lives in the town of Mount Pleasant. And that's something I hope we can correct in the future. It doesn't mean they don't represent us well. It doesn't mean that there are constituents aren't their constituents, but they don't live in the town of Mount Pleasant. Everybody knows that next week we're hosting a legislative dinner. We'll do that every year, and it's a time to address things. Annexation laws that are antiquated. Statewide flooding. Somebody probably knows the bill number about using accommodations tax, hospitality tax, and all that for infrastructure needs instead of promoting more tourism. I don't think our region has a lack of tourism or tourism promotion, but we have a lack of infrastructure to support that, and we need to be able to use those state funds to do that. The other thing we're about to ask, if you go back to the chart with the projected forecast, what kind of assumptions are made as you get down to 2025 and 5 years out and all that kind of stuff? One, we know there's that reassessment coming up. So that means that what are we operating on now? When was the last assessment, property tax assessment?
Would have been 2015.
Okay. So I can tell you from my neighborhood, just from the market prices of housing that I see getting sold, it has gone up significantly in the past 2 years, probably 3 years. So when those reassessments hit, did we forecast, do we know what percent? In other words, your tax rate didn't go up, but your value went up, so you're going to be paying more taxes.
That's right, and that is not included in this number for 2021, which we see in 2022. Because the council is going to have to make a decision at that point as to what to do with the tax rate. So we couldn't assume that money. In other words, council could say, hey, we're going to be revenue neutral, and then request that staff lower the tax rate so that there's no new money brought in. So it wasn't something we could count on as a revenue source.
Okay. So there's that. There's commercial development that will, as Kathy pointed out, does not take more services than it pays for. All of that, I saw a thing today, something sold on Houston Northcutt Boulevard for $275 square foot. This was just a business, that's a lot of money. And so if it's worth that much, and like values holding their own, but that also means strong tax revenues. The other point I want to bring out is our budget every year, we operate at a surplus. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but we reach a point of time as chair of your committee, we've had this conversation, how much money do you need to stash away before it goes from being prudent to hoarding, right? I mean, what's our fund balance now The amount is 50?
Not quite that high. Yeah. The amount available is 16? 16 million.
Okay. So how much do we need? Is something we need to talk about. Eric, you and I had this conversation when I first came in office. We don't do that just to operate at a, call it a surplus profit, or we do that for a reason. And it's a good reason, but there's a point at which you have to say, okay, well, does it just need to go into savings, or can we spread it among these departments and not have to raise taxes and fees and those kind of things? So it's just something we need to look at. We've got to decide what that number is.
Couple comments on that, and I hear what you're saying, but it's interesting. I have been on council a long time, but we've dipped into that appropriate fund balance a few times. Not that it was a bad idea, but we did. And sometimes it's nice to have that there, or when things pop up. So the question is how much,
right?
You know, what is it so that we can use that? And it's all council policy on what that is. But we just went out for a pretty big bump. Mm-hmm. And I haven't seen the results yet, but it's going to be good. And because I know that. Because I know what the factors are. And one of the things that they look at are those fund balances.
Right.
And when Eric, you know, we have 46, but he said 16. And the reason he said that was because a lot of it's appropriate. A lot of it's not unappropriated. So it's not, we say 46 million. But not really 46 million. We are our ability to use it. But that's 16 is a lot of money. You know, so it's just a matter of policy of what we think, you know, what we use as we go along. The other thing too, I don't know. Yeah, there you go. But I think that we control that. We control that. But I'm just, as the finance chair, saying we have to be cautious as we decide how much we'll pull it out. I think, I'm not saying we should, but I'm saying we have to really be careful when we have this.
Well, I think what we're both saying is we have to decide what the purpose is and what the appropriate amount for those purposes is.
And we'll have some discussions later in the afternoon that I welcome about referendum questions and things like that. And some of our using of those funds have been for land. You know, wouldn't it be nice if we had a land purchase fund that the public decided they'd rather have this as, you know, non-developed land,
right,
that we didn't have to keep dipping back into our fund balance for. So that's a discussion for later, but I appreciate your thought. Yeah, I think you're on track with it.
Yes.
One quick follow-up to Amy's comment is that there is an economic advisory panel made up of mostly corporate executives and business owners, small business as well as large business owners here in Mount Pleasant. And one of the things that came out the other day that is very worth sharing is the idea, and I mentioned about it's hard to project things when you don't, like just what Mr. DeMora said about we can't include because we don't know what the millage will be in 2021, but yet we know intuitively, unless something really drastic happens between now and then, if we left the millage where it is, property values should readjust up and we should have a lot more revenue from that. Similarly, we can't really project the impact of what I'm about to say, which is that group thought, gee, there's an awful lot of county property. A lot of donut holes, and I'm not talking about in the residential areas, I'm talking about on Highway 17 and Long Point Road and other places that are prime for economic development. So not only with my earlier comment, but with things that Mayor Haney said and others have said, we actually can't even project how big the numbers could be because we don't get a dime right now from that raw land sitting there that's county property. Someday, those could be fabulous jobs, revenue, et cetera.
Thank you.
Mr. Berman. Eric, I noticed the title of that is General Fund Revenue Projections. Mm-hmm. How does capital budget play into dollars?
It's getting tighter as the years go on. You're having, the impact fee forecasts. That money is going to go right towards capital projects. You're seeing hospitality tax start to get stretched. We fund a lot of personnel out of hospitality tax, accommodations taxes as well. And those are restricted funds, as you know. So, you know, keep in mind as well, when we run a surplus, we bifurcate it into, okay, for capital projects.
If this is tighter, then less money will be available then to build it.
That's correct.
Project, and so that's going to impact on big projects. We absolutely really got to think, but that was before here as well.
And we fully maximize our special revenue funds to support operations as much as allowed for under the law.
And that goes back to my original statement I made earlier, because accommodation tax and hospitality tax is generated through recreation programs that we're doing now. And if we increase the recreation, then it'll increase those funds as well. And that, to me, is the best way to increase them, is to put on more you know, tournaments or whatever we need to do, like other municipalities around the state are doing. Myrtle Beach is doing a great job of that, and so is Rock Hill. We ought to look at what they're doing and how they're doing it, and try and pattern ourselves after some of them, so that we can raise those accommodations tax and hospitality fees that will go back into operations in Derrick City.
Derrick, what's the size of our staff, town staff total?
We run about 650 to 675.
Okay.
Yeah.
Has that changed dramatically in the during this big growth spurt we've had? Has that had to change much?
Not much. It's we had dropped quite a few employees through the recession period, and we slowly started to gear back up.
Were those layoffs or attrition?
Attrition.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I think practically all the employees that have been hired since have gone towards major service expansions, you know, more garbage crews, 8th Police Patrol District, larger things like that. You know, most of the employees have gone towards direct core services.
Okay.
Thank you. Yes. The one thing that I keep going back to last council meeting, when Marcy and Eric helped me with the numbers, just looking at the cost of doing business in Mount Pleasant, I was really taken with the numbers that a median home takes, that the town has to pay $1,300 to pay for services for that median home, yet we only collect a little over $500 in property taxes. Or to pay for that. And you know, what business can you sell or provide $1,300 worth of product, yet only charge $500 for that? You know, we've been living off, you know, always throwing new houses down the top of the funnel so that we can keep paying the bills. And that's, at some point, you know, it's going to come due. And I've always been a person who felt that any program needs to pay for itself. And with the town only bringing in $500 but providing $1,300 of service, and that's $700, you know, that we have to look and say, where's that coming from? And, you know, we have other competing demands have to provide. And I'm still wondering, where is that money coming from? You know, I run airplanes. If I was paying $6,000 a month in gas, for gas alone, yet I was only bringing in $2,000, I wouldn't be in business very long. So I think that as we go forward, I know everyone hates the T word, but you know, everything should be self-sufficient. And just like when we talk about short-term rentals and the other employee and all the things that are going to have to go along with that program, the one thing that I've said is we're going to have to charge those people who want to have short-term rentals if this program comes into being. They're going to have to pay enough to cover the cost so that that program is self-sufficient. And because we don't need to be adding to our town service burden while not bringing in any money for it. So it's a timely subject right now.
Yes.
I tend to agree with Tom and John on some being able to pick themselves. I know for the rec department, for example, I signed my son up to soccer. It was $50. $50 for my son to play soccer for the town. That is nothing. That is Starbucks the week. And I think that the rec department is one area where it could become not just self-sufficient, because right now it's subsidized, not just self-sufficient, but revenue-generating. I think that's one opportunity. And I think that with this, I mean, as Mr. DeMore has said, we can sustain for the next 5 years. We can kick the can down the road. We can sit on this and sort of adopt a hopeful attitude that everything is going to turn out all right through property assessments and that additional revenue and economic development. But I think that there's just pressing needs on the town, especially with stormwater. And then I think as we get further down into the visioning of just what is our vision for Mount Pleasant? I mean, are we content to be the bedroom community of Charleston, or are we our own thing? We are the fourth largest city in the state of South Carolina, and nobody knows who we are. Our identity is unclear. We are Charleston adjacent. So I personally don't feel like taking the can down the road and taking whatever sort of heat we have to take for it. I'm with Tom. I'll sit next to Tom and take the heat with him.
Mr. DeMora, can you go back to the revenue, the millage again? Can you tell us, as far as millage increase, what our millage rate is today?
Yes, sir.
For Mount Pleasant, it's 41 mills. I'm sorry.
Can you elaborate on what it is for the city of Charleston and the city of North Charleston?
I can. I had this information prepared. Mount Pleasant's 41. I'll give you 10 surrounding communities. Mount Pleasant's 41. We're the lowest of these 10, by the way. Goose Creek is 50. Berkeley County's 50.5, Hanahan's 56.2, Charleston County 59.8, Somerville 63.9, Monk's Corner 70.3, City of Charleston 83.6, North Charleston 97, and on both of those two on much larger value bases.
Correct. Thank you, sir. Appreciate that.
Mr. Chairman, how did property values play into that? I mean, using a picking up someone's trash in front of their house, the $1 million house gets the same amount of stops as the $200,000 house. Doesn't our budget increase dramatically because of the property values already? So the millage, even though it sounds like our millage is so low, it's dependent upon property values. So if you look at a place with maybe lower property values, at Goose Creek or Hanahan, maybe a little lower than us, the per taxpayer burden is really the issue, isn't it?
Not necessarily. I mean, take a location like the city of North Charleston, heavy industry, 10% tax rate. They're bringing in considerable amounts of revenue because of that, and they apply a 97 mil to it. So it is, we do have higher than average values, but certainly not higher than a lot of places around us. The islands.
About an apples to apples comparison, and you know, and what do they look like on their residential side?
Well, it's the same rates applied, the same millage rates applied.
I understand, but what we're trying to get at is if a family lives in a $200,000 home versus an $800,000 home, mm-hmm. what's the tax burden difference?
Sure.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Tom.
I want to jump into the conversation. I think you're getting to what sometimes. When you tell the public, you're 38 bills. But if you can say on a, well, there aren't many $200,000 houses in Mount Pleasant.
But I'm comparing it to these other places where they charge. But looks like they're charging a higher bill.
I think that's a good question. But whenever I said I spoke to the seniors, that's what I did. I went back and did the math on a $400,000 house and what it costs here, there. We're still way under. And even though what you're saying is philosophically correct, Eric's numbers they're not going to change the way the other communities collect on those type of houses.
But I'm operating from the assumption we have to look at another town that has a similar makeup, which is predominantly residential. And I can't imagine our trash collection being costing double what it does in another residential area.
Well, so does Adam Allen Homes. Our will, I think, answer your question quite well, that at least in my opinion, we're still well.
And they have private, either to pay in a lot of these communities for services we already provide.
Mr. Russo. Eric, how many times have we rolled the millage rate back after reassessments? And I think that will partially answer the question because the board said we're not going to enjoy a windfall rather than saying these are the assessments and this is the millage rate we have and that's the way it's going to be. Too many times we can roll that back, roll the millage rate back, so we wouldn't enjoy it, so we wouldn't have a windfall.
Well, if that was to come about that we have to increase it around that time, maybe the idea of provisioning should be between now and then, this is what we're going to build, this is what you're going to see in your new town government package as a citizen. There's more, in other words, these new things are coming are what's going to be funded.
Well, and I don't believe that most people, if you'd say, do you know that the town of Mount Pleasant rolls your millage rate back when you reassess?
No,
just look at you the blind stare. It's inherent to Marcy that those numbers really mean something. How thinly you can slice that. So, that's part of what Mount Pleasant does. And you're right, maybe the next one, next reassessment. Maybe
I want every stone turned over before that.
Maybe we won't roll it back.
No, I would like to see that town hall list out before we raise our taxes.
Mr. Bremer,
just as one example.
Yeah, I think what Kevin's getting at, if I understand correctly, is moving away from the millage discussion. People want to know what's the bottom line. How many dollars are coming out of my wallet to pay taxes? Mm-hmm. I think that's the way that we talk about this with the public. It's not millage rates. So the whole point of, but one of the points of growing back is that you don't stick people with a larger tax bill for something beyond their control, which is the property values. Of course, you don't want the town to have a windfall, but you also want to moderate how much people are paying. So the question becomes, whether it's Mount Pleasant versus North Charleston or anywhere else, is how many more dollars are you asking me to pay and for what reason? And I think any kind of discussion about revenue increases should be in those terms. Yes, it's going to cost you $25 more a year, but here's that $25 for the building. Again, talking about millage and rollbacks, I don't think resonates with the public.
Ms. Lane?
Eric, would you mind going back or noticeable and go back to that slide which shows animal numbers? Okay, so in a 5-year time period, using a 4% annual increase in property value, which does not include new properties, which there's lots of as we well know.
Yes, it does. This is all new growth, new revenue.
Okay, right. Yeah. Now, what I'm saying is, if we keep the millage, this is a lot of discussion about millage right now, which is fine, whatever direction everybody wants to go in. But just using that, if we just simply don't, there's very few people out there who are going to admit to the fact that Mount Pleasant gave them a break on the last tax assessment and lowered the millage. There's very few people that are going to remember that. But there's a lot of people that are going to remember if on the next tax assessment we raise the millage or we did it right before or right after. But they are not going to sit there and get angry. We have something today we didn't have years ago, and that is that most people can go on Zillow or whatever, and whether you think those values are real or not, they're there. And most of the time, the tax assessments are lower. So even if the tax assessment goes up, that's not going to be held against the town council or the town administrator or anybody else as long as the millage doesn't go up. That's what I think. That doesn't mean it doesn't cost them more money. Of course it does. So I calculated in 5 years, a 4% annual increase in property value as an average is about a 22% increase. So if we factored that in to that 2021 number and said, what would that mean with the same millage? It's a lot of money. And so just from this viewpoint, and I'm with Kevin, thank you for what you said, Councilman Kinnane, about the fact that we need to turn over every other stone and every other possibility before we ever actually talk about really raising taxes. Thank you.
I would just ask Eric or maybe Marcy if you could explain, when there's a reassessment, if you only go up a percentage anyway, it doesn't shoot high up. Isn't there a cap here?
Yes, there is a cap, 15%. 15%. And we would probably likely hit the cap in Mount Pleasant. So there's already a control in place
to prevent this massive increase in reassessment. That's at the state law level, right?
That's right. Yeah. And we only have a recapture. It only trues up then upon point of sale. So if the property sold, then it trues up outside the cap.
Well, if it switches from full tax to investment property to residential.
You got it. Yeah.
Well, that's what I was getting at. And we don't have meetings, in my, correctly, when I'm wrong, not if I'm wrong. We don't have meetings where we sit around and say, let's take the tax. That's the county tax assessor that does all that work. So we're not going to get all that money on the increase in the houses. We're not. And 15 is a cap?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So. And I think we'll hit the cap, but it's not like our values go up 50%, so we're going to get 50% more tax money. And it's not even alcohol. It's the county tax assessor that lets us know what will be our budget, what that's going to be. So it'll be more, but it's not going to be crazy more.
And we wouldn't see it until year three or four.
If I'm not mistaken, a few years ago, did one municipality to the county actually put a statement on the tax bill that said, no, you're paying more, but it's not us. It's the school district. Because the tax bill will go up with the school district, everybody else hits the same year. But from our perspective, we can at least say, here's what we're doing as a town. And, you know,
it doesn't matter. If their taxes go up, they might not. And it's everybody else's stuff. So.
But I have to say that there has to be a vote of council after reassessment to set the tax rate.
Right.
I think so. It all comes to that moment as to what happens in terms of revenue.
And that will be in 2021?
Yeah, or if they're delayed, have to wait until 22.
Okay.
Yeah.
So keep in mind, and for those of you live tweeting the meeting, we're not talking about this year, next year, or even a year after. We're talking about years down the road. We've got time to think about this. Two things I want to comment on. One is, when the comprehensive plan draft comes to us, let's think about all of this. And if you read the newspaper and you listen to those who seem to shout loudly, they want us to increase our residential density when we already are at 1,505 people per square mile, more than Charleston, more than North Charleston. They're looking at Mount Pleasant, where we have the highest land costs and the highest values overall, and telling us to increase our density when the other municipalities around here who are doing, North Charleston's doing great, you know, Councilman Canadian, your point was they're doing great on business. They've got Boeing, they've got, you know, everybody to think of. We don't have that kind of land. We're not going to get the manufacturing industry over here. Our niche, as Mr. Jones can probably tell you, our niche is going to be the life sciences, the specialty logistics, and the IT, and anything that has to do with technology. And that's what we worked on in you chairing the committee with that panel, that economic development panel, is we need to brand ourselves that way. That if you want to, you know, live here, have a headquarters here, have a great quality of life and the best schools in the county, you're going to locate to Mount Pleasant. And we're going to, you know, we're going to market that. And I think we're going to be a very strong competitor. One of the members of the student panel told us at lunch the other day that and there are hotels, and they have five of them here, that the people that are working in with Volvo and Mercedes are staying in Mount Pleasant, driving up there and buying homes and putting their kids in Mount Pleasant schools, and they're working up there. So we've got that coming. One is, let's consider what residential density does to us when we start talking about the comprehensive plan and how dense we already are. And the other is, as we get closer, we know there are hundreds of residences in the town of Mount Pleasant being used as nightly hotels, hundreds of them. And there's probably more that we don't know about because that's the, what's it called, air DNA that finds your, the short-term rentals. People are finding ways to be stealthy with that, so they're not So that property that's being taxed at 4%, it ought to be taxed at 6%. So we talk about turning over every stone. There's a place we need to look right there. You're using our neighborhoods and all of that as commercial, then you need to be taxed as being a commercial entity. So there are a lot of stones you can overturn. But again, as we look down the road, let's don't let the comp plan compound our problems. And one of the problems is, and it's pointed out by the chairman of the previous economic development strategy, that one of the last remaining zone economic development tracts in Mount Pleasant was rezoned to residential and is now a residential neighborhood because there's so much pressure to build residences in Mount Pleasant. We cannot do that, or we'll be having this conversation every year. So, any other comments on this before we move on? Do we need a short break? We'll go on to the next short break. Okay. We'll take about a 5-minute break and then come back to the next one. Item 4, review of strategic plan progress. Mr. DeMora.
Thank you, Mayor. When I reached out to y'all about ideas for agenda items for today, and I was asked to give an overview of our strategic plan progress. So, by the way, it's been a little while, but I put an extra copy in front of you today. But this is the second strategic plan that we've had in my tenure here. The first one, you may remember this one here, not as pretty fancy as the one you have in front of you now, dates back to 2012, and it was a pretty significant document for us. It was really our first strategic plan. Think of that. And it brought to us our first real CIP, a whole new healthcare model that's worked well for employees, saved the taxpayers millions, no doubt about that. And it came with 51 objectives, and we met them all. And it was very successful. And so we used it as the foundation for the one that you have in front of you. And it started in 2016 and goes through 2020. And it has 5 themes. Better yet, if you would, if you have it in front of you, open up the pages 6 and 7. It lays it out very clearly for you. The themes are actually on the next page, but I'll get to that. But this strategic plan, as I mentioned, was built on our first one. And the first one had delivered us a mission statement. We created a vision statement with this document, continued with our core values and our core beliefs. And you see it all right here on pages 6 and 7. And these are the things that we operate by internally. And the beauty of these documents is you've heard me say in the past, you need 3 documents, right? You have to have your emergency operations plan, your comprehensive plan, and then your strategic plan. And the strategic plan typically is an internal focus, and it allows us to continue to improve. It pushes us to improve internally despite always changing conditions, whether nationally or statewide or whatever. And so it has been very helpful to us. The next page is 8 and 9. You'll see our themes. We've continued with several different key themes and goals: our operational excellence, community involvement, investing in our employees, and the big one, which is incident management, that brought Amanda Knight on, delivered to us our emergency operations plan, and some other things. But focusing on the presentation here, I mentioned the 5 themes. It has 14 goals, 83 objectives, 41 initiatives, and a partridge in a pear tree, bless you, Martine. And it goes through the end of 2020, and I'm proud to say we're making significant progress. 67 of the 83 objectives are done. And if you add in the 6 that are currently in progress, the 6 that are currently in progress, that brings us to 73 of 83 of the objectives are either completed or in progress. And I'm not going to go through all these for the sake of time, but I mentioned about our emergency management function, some of our major accomplishments, All America City, thanks to y'all. We have some items remaining in the plan. Last week we spent time, with thanks to Mr. Gergic and his staff, Mr. Owens, Mr. Santos were there, with the accreditation for park and recreation, which I think went very well. We're anticipating some good news there. You'll see the economic development strategy. That's one of the items still that's coming. And thanks to your panel, sir, and the work of our economic development committee, we know that that is on its way. And we have some challenges and beyond that I won't spend a lot of time in here, but it's helping us to set the stage for the next strategic plan, which is going to require, I'm going to talk about this in a moment under the outlook for the future, but I think after you hear me, I'm hopeful you'll agree that we're going to need more support of employees and more innovation in some different things. Sir?
If I may, looking at this and going back to page 9, if you look under incident management, especially event security, and then you look at this, I am amazed in our roles on this council. When you look at the big public events that we have as a municipality, the bridge run, the blessing of the fleet, a big Christmas parade. I don't know if North Charleston has one as big as ours, but I know Charleston does. And then you look at, for instance, this was the first year I've ever been to the 4th of July in New Yorktown. Tens of thousands of people, and all the job the chief does, both of our chiefs and everybody does for that, public services, all of that. We had a big burden because of where we're located, the attractions that we have here, and those type of things. Are we getting any outside cost assistance for any of that? State, county, anything? I mean, we had that event. They had the event. The Department of State had an event on New Yorktown. What was that, Chief? Back in October, November, with the 40 ambassadors. And how big was our deployment there? The command center was there and all that stuff. And other municipalities don't have to do those things, and we do.
That's right.
And it seems like we ought to get a little assistance with that.
It would be great, that's for sure. You mentioned the parade and Children's Day and really major events that have 15,000 or so people. We're typically going it alone. Thankfully, as you mentioned, we have the capability, the equipment, the personnel, and the training to do it. The only time that I'm aware of anyway, and staff can correct me, that we get support, really significant support, is during the bridge run. I know the State Guard is there. I know there are state and federal, I believe, assets on the ground. But, man, I think you're right on. It would be, especially for events of regional importance, that it's more than just our people, it would be nice to have some extra support.
Well, the assumption by everybody when they do these things is that Mount Pleasant can handle it, and we can, and we're ready. But if it's our citizens footing the bill for that, and it's a lot more than our citizens enjoying that, like the bridge run.
That's right.
Just something that I think about, the bridge run is just around the corner. That's a huge deal. Yes, sir, Mr. Wilson.
Speaking of the bridge run, doesn't the bridge run pay for our police?
They give us a lot of support. Yeah. Yeah. And that's the only real event.
There's
that
the combination of taxes pays for some of that. The bridge run pays for, I'm sure it doesn't pay for all of it.
Yeah.
There's big checks coming for the even from the government. So it's not all footed by the town for the bridge run.
One of your specialties is events like that. Is as we look down the road for revenues, is there a chance to? I mean, what if everybody in the bridge room had a $1 fee and don't run out and say, we're charging, you know, I'm going to send us 40,000 people. That's $40,000 they get in one day. I mean,
yeah, there's a ton of money made at the bridge room.
Right.
We don't make it.
Right.
That's not saying we can't have a marathon or a bridge run and make $500,000 ourselves. We can do these ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And we can support it ourselves. And all the money can go back to fire and police. But Marcus Newberry decided to do the bridge run and it started with this, and the bridge run gets all the money.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they've raised the fee often.
Right.
If we do something like that ourselves, holy heck, there's crazy money in that.
We could have one coming back the other way.
We can have
start in Charleston.
We can have in the river. We can have some pretty cool stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, Mayor, that's just my point I was making earlier. That's just one of the things that we can look at through recreation that can help supply revenue to the town that might be able to assist the police, the fire, and things like that. Because through accommodation tax, hospitality tax has to go to specific areas. Things like this is what we can do to help support development.
And Mayor, I wanted to mention that all this information that's in front of you is available to our public by going on our website. And through a click of the button, our strategic plan information. We have a website called Empower, small e, capital N-P, O-W-E-R. And it is as much data, and I think Mr. Owens brought it up, as much data as anyone would care to want to read. Not only this information on our progress and how we're doing with our strategic plan, but also on our budget and other things. We've had 75,000 hits on that website, so I think the public is looking at it and monitoring our progress.
Eric, one of the things I wanted to mention that we did it last year when the four of us were first on council, and Gary, you are already here, we realized that, first of all, this is what the staff does, and you're at the top of that pyramid, and then you've got nine bosses. And oftentimes, like when we did Eric's new contract and salary and all that stuff, we realized we weren't really giving you any feedback. Not officially, not where we could sit down and say, you know, this is where we stand and this is great and let's focus on this and that. So as we do that this year, especially given our form of government, we need to be real clear with Eric, what, as the nine of his employers, what our expectations are. He's done a great job, I think, of acting without as much guidance and input as we can give, but I think we can give more. Not nine different phone calls five times a day, but as a group, because this reflects, I mean, ultimately, council is at the top of this pyramid, and Eric keeps his job by keeping the majority of us happy, and he does a good job on that, but he can't do it flying blind. We've got to have feedback and input from council. So any way we can improve that, we certainly need to do that.
Thank you.
And I'm not saying that from us to the top down. Eric has asked us for that, to his credit. So, yes, Bob.
Mr. Mayor, that's a really good comments. I will say that from an HR perspective, we are currently in that process of the evaluation, and this document here, I think, will be a great guide for us on council to be able to look back on not only the accomplishments of our administrator, but the whole team. I can tell you, working in government at the local, county, and state levels for almost 30 years, it is almost unheard of for government agencies to have a plan laid out as specifically as this, and to have a plan executed 100%. I mean, it's just, you don't see that very often. And so the fact that the first plan was completed fully, and this one is well on its way, I think it just speaks to town and staff here and their focus on accomplishing. Not just being busy, not just being productive, but accomplishing goals. And I think this is a great document for us to be able to measure that. So thank you for bringing that forward, Eric. Thank you to staff for it. I know you guys meet up with and a lot of what the staff does is they go back to this document and say, how are you doing? And what stuff needs to be done? And one last point is this also should be consistent with budgeting. Because the budget that Eric has told it to us is trying to accomplish these things. So we need to make sure that we know what's in this plan and that we give them a budget that allows them to accomplish this.
Yes, ma'am.
If I could add one small thing to that, and that is that in business we refer to the definable, repeatable process. When you can define what happens the way this is done, and it can be therefore be repeated, it makes it a lot more successful, and essentially a template. And
the one thing I think that everybody should fear, and staff included, I know maybe has in the past, is that because our situation changes every 2 years, and essentially every 4 years, but every 2 years you can have pretty significant turnover on the council. And because of that, I think it's really important that a future council, they, we can't make them be held anything, but if we can show that this works and demonstrate it, and as has already been done, prove that this is a definable, repeatable process, and it makes it a lot easier for everybody to plan and be successful.
Mr. DeMauro, how much does this, did this plan cost? Was it written by a consultant or was it written in-house?
No, we, excuse me, we write it ourselves. And we conduct the entire development process ourselves. We've got the skills to do it, and we do it. I'm sure there was cost to print it. So,
well, there's a difference from the one you showed us there to this. This is a 30-page, professionally prepared internal document. I mean, but yeah, I know it's only another cup of Starbucks, but I see a lot of this branding and fluff around. This is great information. It doesn't have to be in a professional magazine format, though. So, just another example. Again, maybe it's just a cup of Starbucks. By the end of the day, that'll add up.
So, well, you know, we talk about, there's a visioning discussion. We talk about feedback. That's important feedback for me. I mean, I need to know from y'all, do you want us to have professional image like that? Or would you like something a little bit different? I mean, you just let us know, and we'll, we can easily write on the back of a piece of a napkin and have it. So.
This is not worth it. Okay. I mean, we're not going to go with paper. And, I mean, come on, man.
This is an internal document again. No, I understand what you're recommending.
It's public.
It's fancy.
It's
you can
public.
See it.
It's a public document. But still, we put our best foot forward. You know, we're not going to... We're not going to do paper documents and send out. We want to be professional. And oh, good Lord, this is a great document.
But our fire department doesn't meet national standards. That's my point.
The point is...
That's not your point. That's your point. Look, it might be your point, but that's not your point.
And Tom, you're not going to work. I'll let that be just said.
The point is, we're Mount Pleasant. You know, when people come here because they want to live here, we have great quality of living and all. We're not going to start skimping on little things like this. I would never vote for that. I think town's done a great job. Staff's done a great job. This is a great document. We'd be proud to show anybody that wants to see it. But I don't think we should go back to doing paper documents and all that to try and save a few bucks when we have such a great plan here and it's really good. I mean, I don't know. I just have an issue with skimping on things like that.
I have an issue with skimping on fire department. Right, every nickel we can find, we go to that.
Right, that's the fire department, and I got no issue with that. I'm just talking about everyday stuff that our staff's doing for us. We're first class here. I want to remain first
he
class.
He showed us the old one, and it was basic paper. Yeah. And it was completed, too.
Mr. Bear?
Yes, sir. I agree. Mr. O'Rourke, you have not.
Yeah, I've got one.
Good.
I mean, we could take and use a crayon and a napkin, but... You know, being a fourth largest municipality in the state of South Carolina, you got to account for something. I don't think the cost of putting the literature in a magazine format is that cost.
Not just this, it's everything
we put out. I got the floor. But one of the things I want to get back to in looking at the strat plan is that a lot of the information that went into the 2015-2020 vision was... historical issues. One of the SWOT, which you reflect back into the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. So not only do you have a vision for the future, but you learn that vision from past events. And you go back and you culminate all of those things to help you provide a more of a futuristic vision for the town going forward and eliminating some of the weaknesses that we've experienced in the past. Correct?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Yeah. Any other? All right. Does that conclude the agenda?
Yes, sir.
Okay. That moves us to item 5, town administrator and department manager's assessment of current and future conditions.
Thank you, Mayor. The intent of this item was to be actually very brief. And so myself and the department managers will come forward 2 minutes. I'm going to give just my assessment as your administrator of the broader view of things, and then they're going to give it from the departmental perspective on what they see as professionals in their particular field. And we're going to do it quickly. As I said, 2 minutes, brief. We're going to hit the highest thing we can. And, of course, if you have questions, we'll take as much time as you need to answer them completely. I have my assessment broken into two categories, external and internal. And you know, I've been administrator here since 2010. And I can say by looking sort of feeling things and how they develop almost nationally and statewide, even economically, I sort of land on the feeling that things are, there's uncertainty and there's volatility out there externally, outside of us. You know, you know all these things, you have to live with them. A 24-hour news cycle, social media, increasing political activism, which isn't all bad, but it's there and what we have to deal with. What seems to be increasing distrust of government at any level, sometimes turning violent in some ways, aging population, and then you have, these are my words, really kind of dysfunction at higher levels of government. I mean, you know what happens in D.C. I think that's a good word for it. We worry at the staff level about, we rely on them for different things, especially with the regulatory bodies. We rely on the federal government for permits and for decisions and for things because they control so much. And we worry about the coming talent drain at the federal level. Shutdowns don't help. I mean, who wants to work there? You know, I don't get a paycheck. Right? So these are things that we worry about from the federal government, state government. You know, we found over the last decade or so, there's little and less coming. Less money to the local government fund, you know that. Little money towards roads and stormwater that they own. And little maintenance in public rights of way and things like that. That we have to cut the grass and all those little things that, that we have tried as we might, haven't been able to get additional resources from the state. And so, internally, we know this, and it's not a bad thing, but we have high expectations for citizen service. I think you see it at your subcommittees especially. There's a lot of demand, not necessarily a bad thing, a lot of demand from the public for more. And there's a demand that, that what's coming forward from the public, they want it to be a priority. But we see it every month at least once. We have leveling resources. As you see from our five-year, I think that's going to happen. That's going to be our expectation long-term. And then there's the growing complexity in local government. There is just things that require more sophistication than it used to at the local government level. I mean, you see it now through our police department for sure, what has to be done, what capabilities we need to have. Goodness, Mr. Peel now has to worry about water quality. You know, and those are things we've never had to deal with before. So what it's requiring us to do is have to have staff who have those kinds of expertise, that type of expertise, in order for us to be able to get permits and meet regulatory requirements. And so the response to the external and internal challenges, as I see it, is I think we have to continue to be self-reliant. That was the major theme of the first strategic plan. I am hopeful we will get more support from other levels of government, but I think you know it, we have to go about this on our own. I think there's going to be little help on some of our major challenges, whether it's stormwater or roads, and we're going to have to continue to spend our citizens' money to fund a lot of these things. So self-reliance, I mentioned about the priorities when there's so much being sent to you from the public in terms of needs. And more innovation. You know, we have the aging community, seniors. How we serve the seniors properly and effectively and in the way you want is going to require changes from us. And also, with regard to innovation, I think we're going to need to see it with transportation. Brad and I talk about this all the time. Personal transportation vehicles, for example, they're coming. We didn't like when Ryan and the other one dropped them all off on the corner of Chuck Dolly and Coleman Boulevard and said, here's 20 of them. But it's coming, either in that format or in another, and we've got to be ready to handle it. I have no doubt, as long as we stay lean and nimble and flexible as an organization, that our best days are ahead of us. But that is, that's my assessment. If it's okay, sir, if we could have a quick from each department manager. Joe, do you want to go?
Would it work better to do each department manager and then our council?
It's up to you.
Ask for it, we'll be all sure that after each one. Because we could get hung up in one and be there. Why don't we get an overview from everybody and then nobody's going anywhere.
Yeah.
So then we can ask our questions. We have a captive audience today. Joey, thank
yes,
you
sir.
For all that you do.
Yes, sir. Good morning, Mayor.
And I want to say, and I know everybody says, and Councilman Owens is chairman of the public services, y'all are often the unheralded heroes of this town. And we appreciate everything that you're involved in.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Mayor, members of the committee, our council. We'll talk a little bit about future challenges and opportunities for the Public Service Department. Master planning and construction of an efficient operations center is critical to the success of this department. A facility of this type will allow us to meet the present and future demands. However, there's a challenge. We're working on three different locations to include construction being performed in a working environment. However, there's an opportunity to build a facility for future growth and to become more efficient in our daily operation. Annexation and growth will continue to have an impact on all divisions within the Public Service Department. Our two fully automated refuse trucks have arrived and will be putting into service soon. Two additional Ford automated trucks have been ordered, and the second round of issuing 7,000 road cards is in the planning stage. The challenge of this is getting the general public to follow collection practices. An example, cards must be placed in a location where they can be collected, and all items must be in that cart for this program to be efficient. Alleyway and one-way streets will be an issue for this type of collection. Collection points will need to change. Opportunity for us is to enforce rules and to change collection practices that may allow us to become more efficient, get staff out of the elements and into a safer working environment. As landscaping throughout the town properties matures, more attention will be needed to manage growth, to include replacement of material. Maintenance of synthetic fields is a challenge for us. Staff has limited knowledge on the short and long-term maintenance of this type of surface. Tough maintenance of natural fields. The challenge for us is providing playing fields not only for the Recreation Department activities, but other groups, and still provide a safe maintenance practices. Example, require reentry time after chemicals have been applied is becoming difficult to meet. An opportunity, though, is to start converting our turf maintenance programs to all organic products and not synthetic to grow and treat natural turf. Stormwater projects to address flooding issues in areas where little to no drainage infrastructure exists or where infrastructure is failing. Example, Old Village, Snee Farm, Hopcaw, and many other older subdivisions. The challenge, funding to make the necessary repairs. The MS4 permit for the town is up for renewal and could possibly require us to adhere to new regulations. One of our biggest challenges is finding, retaining employees that are willing to perform the type of work that we do on a daily basis.
Mayor, can I add something?
Sure.
Jody, I just want everybody to know, and I know this happens throughout each department, but I just want to commend you. There are times when I get called by the general public, as you know, Mayor and Joe Bustos, where we have to go out on site and take a look at the various problems they have. Jody makes himself available to me. I'll go in his office and say, listen, we've got a problem. A citizen wants to go out on site. Can you make it? Yeah, just let me know what time, when, and where, and I'll be there. So I just want to thank you for being always available. And, the citizens are, I'm sure, just as great.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Joey, just a quick question. If we had turf fields, we wouldn't have to worry about pesticides and other things as well, right?
Well, You're correct in that, but then also there comes this other side to synthetic.
Okay, now I'm just wondering, we wouldn't have to take down fields 65, 70 days a year to grow back grass and things like that, right?
For the amount of play that we have on our fields, yes, you are going to have to put your fields down for a period of time in order to regrow grass so you have a safe, plain surface.
But we wouldn't do that if we had synthetic fields.
Synthetic fields, you are correct, but synthetic fields have other issues that will go with synthetic fields.
Thank you. Good morning. From the Planning and Development Department perspective, I think we see ourselves almost as at an inflection point in sort of the status of the community and where we may be headed. Currently, we're sort of at the end of what we would probably call a major construction project, building this community and getting it to where it is today. But we see things like the slowing of residential development activity. It's just the amount of land we have available has shrunk. We're shifting from larger projects to smaller ones. We don't have 1,000-acre master plan developments. We have 2-acre sites or 4-acre sites. That changes. We're always dealing with renovations, additions, changes to buildings. So when folks look at what we do and they say, well, you must not be very busy, we don't see a lot of new development. No, there's a whole ton of activity that occurs on a day-to-day basis dealing with individual lots, teardowns of structures, drainage, tree preservation. We managed nearly 600 requests last year from individuals wanting to assess whether they could remove a tree or not. And so that's the level of detail that we currently work at. We need to finish our comprehensive plan and resolve major regulatory issues that you've been struggling with, and one of those, say, is short-term rentals. In the future, we see refining and maintaining Mount Pleasant. Comprehensive plan has a lot of recommendations in it, an action plan that we're going to need to follow. There's additional planning that's needed. You can't cover it at 30,000 feet, so we need to do additional work. The changing nature of our community is really going to have a need to have us have different responses to those things. We've talked about an older, aging community in terms of population, but the physical community is getting older. As your housing ages, as commercial areas age, then you have redevelopment. Changes in that, more complaints about dilapidated housing, neighbors' expectations that those things will be maintained. We're not necessarily geared up to deal with that kind of community at this point. And my notes just went blank. Internally, we see the need for just being able to manage data and information. In the information age, people want instant responses, and we need to be able to build systems internally where we can track, what it is that we're doing. On the regulatory side, we need to be working on our zoning code and land development regulations updates based on where they are today, but the changes that are occurring and what the comprehensive plan might call for. Customer service is a big deal for us. So again, having information available that we can get to. We're also anticipating some senior level retirements, so our workforce will change. Some of our positions are very difficult to fill. Nobody grows up to be a land codes inspector to go out and deal with a question about drainage or tree removal, and so we have to find people who are willing to do that kind of work. And coupled with that, some of the things we might do in the future would be thinking about the rules and regulations we develop and make sure they're commensurate with our resource capabilities. We may be able to do 80% rather than 100%, but be able to manage it from an administrative standpoint. That's all I've got.
Thank you. Next.
Good morning, Mayor, Council. It's always a pleasure to stand up in front of you and talk about our great men and women in uniform, our police department. So I just want to start out by talking about our staffing. staffing's good. We have several folks in training right now, but unlike some of my peers and other law enforcement partners who are experiencing issues with recruitment and applicant pool, that's not something we're experiencing. We have to turn them, many away who aren't meeting our standards or we still have the position to fill. And what I want to say to you, elected officials, is I attribute that directly not only to the professional culture that our agency has always had, but the strong support we get from our mayor and town council when it comes to ensuring compensation and benefits that are competitive and providing the funding that we need for the best equipment for our men and women out there doing the job. And for that, I thank you all. It makes a difference, I can tell you. Especially here recently, I've been in Columbia quite a bit, seeing other chiefs and sheriffs from across the state, some things we're dealing with. And we're well above when we take care of our men and women. We're doing a great job here. We always want more, no question about it, but great job. I appreciate that. I want to talk about our crime rate, our town. And we're recognized nationally all the time about our low crime and how low it is. And I've just completed my 6 years as your chief. Almost 30 years with the town. That's coming up on that pretty quick. But what I want to talk about when it comes to crime, after I just completed my 6 year, this is my 6 year with the great men and women that we have that are out there patrolling the streets, we have decreased crime every single year that I've been chief and the men and women have been out there patrolling. Again, that goes back to having the right folks and the right equipment. Our violent crime, last year, we finished down another 10.5%. When you're reading about agencies around us that are dealing with homicides, violent assaults, we had zero. And we had two the year prior, and unfortunately they were domestic related, so we're not having that type of street crime. Again, I attribute that directly to the men and women that are in the streets being proactive and patrolling. Our armed robberies, we cut almost in half last year. That has a lot to do, again, with that proactive work, but it's more the work of our investigators who identify these folks, we arrest them, and then we get them prison time so they're not back out here continually breaking in or continually robbing our stores or our banks. Our nonviolent crime, this is what I always worry about as a chief. It's a quality of life type stuff. But we still manage to reduce our nonviolent crime, and that's our break-ins, those type of things, by 5.5%. Our burglaries went down almost 22%. Our home and business burglaries, again, that goes back to us having a men and women on the street. We got that 8th district so I could get the officers up in that area who are patrolling, actively involved, getting out and knowing our community and knowing our businesses and knowing what their needs are, working with them on crime prevention. That has helped keep that number down. I say that as I enter my 7th year as a chief, I worry. What happens when we go up a little bit? Again, a rise in crime is not, you don't like it anywhere. We as a community have enjoyed such a low crime rate. If we have more car break-ins next year, you may see it not go down as low. So I've got to be mindful of that and keep an eye on that, and we do everything we can to educate our public. I appreciate our folks, and with our media back there, this is something I love you to put out. As much as we love the comfort level that you have and you count on your police lock your cars. If we could just get that, my crime would go down even more. Don't leave your key fob in that car so you can start it and drive off with it. But I just bring that to your attention just so you know that if you see a small increase, it's not because we're not doing our job. We've just been doing it so good. And we can continue. My goal is still to take it down again. So I just wanted to mention that to you. Some of the other issues that I'm concerned about is obviously traffic. We know the highways are very busy out there. We do the best we can to get collisions moved and respond to them quickly. One of the things I'm looking at doing is we get our folks to the police academy. Keep in mind, through the staffing that we have, the numbers are good, but I still got to get them trained. Not just because I've got them on the books, I got to get them through the academy, through their field training. Is it get my traffic unit up a little with some more folks in there? Our motors have been great, being able to work in and out of traffic. So I do recognize there's going to be some traffic issues. And I also think about challenges for us on these outside areas. Clements Ferry Road, that concerns me every single day. It's not in my jurisdiction, but it affects me directly. Ms. Kieran, I believe you asked about the shooting that you thought had occurred at Harris Teeter. It happened in Hugie area, up in that area, but they came to Mount Pleasant, brought the victim there, and we started providing care. I don't anticipate we started having that type of violent crime here, but we're still going to have folks that come in, use our roads. We're going to have the traffic violations, the extra traffic. We could have the thefts. So I have to be mindful of what's going on in these areas. I work with my other law enforcement partners. So I mention that to you as not just our towns grow up, but the growth around us. Talking to Mr. Moore often, we talk about law enforcement, the trends that change over the years. Again, I've been in the job in almost 31 years, and I've watched the change. We'll still enforce the law, but I can see us moving, and I already see it. Police departments across the nation are moving from an enforcement role to more of an assistance role. The more and more that funding goes away from programs, mental health, Bob, you know what we're talking about there, the mental health programs, it falls back on us. We handle it. The opioid issue. We're taking the lead in the state on that with our First Steps programs that one of my sergeants put together. Again, I have agencies from across the state asking me about this. But these are non-traditional type of work that law enforcement hasn't done that we're going to continue to be asked to do. I heard a lot of conversation about our elderly population. We're right here involved working with the fire department on our ROC programs and our home checks with our elderly. So I just remind you that as we're going forward, it's not all about writing the tickets all the time or making the arrests. We're out there in the community. We're dealing with our youth. And we're going to continue doing that, recognizing that our role as law enforcement is becoming law assistance and helping those folks out. Lastly, and then I'll close, talk about the next 5 years, what I think the police department's going to look like. I think it's going to be changed at the top. I really do. You're talking, I said I've been on the job 31 years. By the way, I got a lot of fuel left in the tank. I'm not going anywhere yet. But I do recognize my deputy chief's been here 30 years. I've been in the law enforcement. I've got captains that are hitting the 25, 28 year mark that may not, there's no real room for advancement necessarily as long as I'm here. But they may be looking at other agencies who would want to achieve. So I recognize that. I have a great sergeant that's getting ready to retire in March. But I just want to tell you, close to let you know, that we're ready for that. When I became chief, one of the things I required is from every supervisor position, sergeant up to me, that we are already training our successor. We are preparing that person. Somebody's ready to be a chief for this agency, ready to step up and continue carrying the torch for what we do. So just know that we're preparing every day to maintain the level of service we have.
Thank you, Chief.
Questions or comments
later, we'll move on.
Oh, yes, sir.
Chief
Nixon. Morning.
Morning.
So as y'all know, we just completed a strategic planning process and a document y'all seen and supported, and we appreciate that, and I feel like that gives me a distinct advantage because we have a really clear vision of the next 5 years and beyond. So thank you for supporting that. But just a quick couple things, and a lot of them are seen throughout other departments as well, is something that we saw in the interviews and the interviews with y'all and the community interviews is just community outreach and engagement. They want to see us more, and we're working to build a program we can get back into schools and just have that visual presence again where they can ask questions and understand what we do. Recruitment, a lot of the departments here are facing that. How do we compete with the Volvos and the Boeings that are paying a little bit more? We want to give that concierge level recruitment where if we see a good application with military experience or previous fire experience, that we really treat that person with kid gloves and show them the Mount Pleasant standard and make them want to be here. An aging population, we've heard that a couple times, 15% of our call volume last year was at nursing care facilities. So how do we address that? How do we still serve that population, but also have that education piece where we reduce our emergency response to those facilities? Accreditation, we're still 2.5 years out from that, but there's some big guiding documents in that we're starting to write, and that really helps us take an internal look at our operations and how they compare nationally. So we're starting those documents now. And then operational policies. We have a large body of policies, but we really want to make sure those clearly define the expectations we have for our firefighters and also increase our operational efficiency. Those are the big five we'll probably be working on in the next 12 months. And again, thank you for the support on the plan, and we're eager to implement it. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief.
Good morning.
So I looked both external and internal as well. So when I look external, one of the things that I continue to look at and monitor is any potential for economic downturn. So we have economic indicators that we monitor, and so hopefully what that will help is early identification. Between early identification and also ensuring that our operational budget is sustainable, that will provide the flexibility that if there are challenges and resources, that we can address those head on. One of the other things we do is we are conservative with our budget estimates. That was touted by all the rating agencies. They really like that. But we do it because what we don't want to do is we don't want to build ongoing operational requirements with funds that are economically sensitive or growth sensitive. If the shift changes, we need to be able to react to that. And so to that point, when we don't count on those and they do materialize, they do fall down to our fund balance. And having a strong fund balance is very important. So it falls to our fund balance, and then based on your policy, part of that goes back into infrastructure, both stormwater and transportation. Let's see, what other pieces? The last piece to help us address this is a balanced five-year plan. So when we look at that and you look at those needs, as we add new capital and all of those pieces come into play, what they also bring with them is ongoing operational costs potentially, or at least maintenance of those facilities. So a five-year plan is really going to help us to identify that and make sure that we can fund those when they come on. We do keep an eye on state legislation, both positive and negative impacts that could have on the locality. Now, when I look internal at my department, one of the areas that I'll be focusing on is we'll be implementing a new financial software. With that, it will bring us the ability to do things like multi-year budgeting. So for some of us, that's very exciting. Also, we'll be have the ability to bring our hospitality tax collection in-house. We're also about to release RFP to develop a five-year technology strategic plan. Technology can help us gain efficiencies, especially in times of limited resources or where we can't add staff. And plus, our technology-savvy residents, they do expect that we have that ability and that we have their personal information secure. So we're going to look at that. The one last piece is the town continues to make these massive investments in capital. We believe that we really need a construction contract manager position that will help support that, you know, day in, day out, helping with these projects. So we looked internal, and what we realized is we had a person that was uniquely suited for this. So we're going to be pulling and separating construction management from purchasing. Purchasing will be reporting to our finance director, Peggy Conkle, and this position will report to our deputy CFO, and it's going to be Rick Riles. So he will be the guy on the street with our projects, helping ensure that the contract management of these major projects are done and done well.
Good morning, Mayor and Council.
Good morning.
I want to let y'all know about some of the challenges to the Recreation Department. Well, like a lot of the other departments, I think one of the top ones is working to meet the continuously increasing demands and high expectations of a very demanding population that we have here in the town. I think that we're alone in that. I think you'll hear that from a lot of areas. Generally doing more tomorrow than we were yesterday, and increasing demand on staff and facilities. We also have managing use between demands for MPRD programs, rentals, and travel clubs. There's a lot of demand for use of our facilities, and I think we need to define our role in that and prioritize use of MPRD programs while still providing access for other groups. Some of the things that are going to help us in doing that in the future, by the summer, we will be ending some agreements that we've had for a long, long term with soccer clubs. We'll be getting back use of 5 athletic fields to be able to use for the department. We will begin phase 3 development of Carolina Park to get additional fields, ball fields, basketball courts, pickleball courts, trails, all kinds of stuff over there. It'll be very nice to have. And then the future development of that Orange Road. Once those occur, we should be able to, it should help us meet some of that demand. serving the growing population on opposite ends of town. We have different ends of the town, especially as the north side of the town keeps growing. Those populations over there, when they get in athletic programs, for them to drive over Sherwood's Dallas or vice versa, those on the south end of town to go to Carolina Park. We get a lot of demand from people to try to schedule things on their own side of town. And I think also having those additional fields in the future will help us be able to do that as well, to meet those requests. And then finally, managing facility use agreements with CCSD, Oceanside Academy, and other organizations that may come along. We have noticed a tendency, specifically on the CCSD side, to pull back on some of the use of some of the facilities that we've been able to use in the past, specifically Moultrie Field, where they use it for their soccer program. The town does maintain those fields, and we are getting incrementally a little bit less use every now and then. Their carrier, some of the use of some of the gyms that we've had in the past. And of course, we had some discussion going on with Oceanside Academy. Great relationship we have with Oceanside Academy. Some discussion about them building a stadium at Carolina Park and us building a stadium in conjunction with them at Carolina Park and then building a baseball field over it on their property. We do have some concerns about making sure that we, in the future, would be able to get the access that we need up front. That's the plan, and then we hope that becomes a reality later on. So, thank you.
Right. Try to be quick. Challenges and opportunity in our field, transportation, the industry and technology is moving so quickly in this regard to offer folks what they're wanting in mobility. Uber, Lyft, bike share programs, Eric already mentioned Bird, and electric scooters popping up. Places like that. So, the question in our industry is what's the newest and most investable technology? We hear about these things, autonomous and connected vehicles, all these things. It's kind of like it's out in the stratosphere somewhere, but these things are real and they're coming. And the biggest challenge, I think, for us as a public entity, as a government, is where do we invest our public money to facilitate in that innovation? Get the best bang for your buck. We did this about, it's almost 10 years now that we started looking at and eventually invested in adaptive signal technology. That has already morphed into the next generation of what we call ITS, where it's just everything's communicating with everything, vehicle to vehicle, vehicle to infrastructure. So that's it on the technology side. We'll have regulatory issues with all of that, but that's the biggest challenge. Infrastructure maintenance, folks have already mentioned this. For me, it's pavement management. We currently have a system about 18% deficient. We spend about $1.5 million. Probably we'd be spending about $3 million, twice that much each year, to maintain just 18% deficiency. So there are always needs, stormwater, pavement, infrastructure. Next 4 or 5 years, you're going to see a huge investment in time and money in infrastructure. Park West Boulevard starting this year, U.S. 17 Rifle Range Road, Connector Road. 41-17 interchange and the widening of 41. Coleman Patriots Point. A lot of staff time goes into managing those projects, but how well we manage the traffic on the network during those projects is going to be a challenge for us. Managing cost projections is very it's difficult in this environment. High growth metro area, understanding and evaluating and staying on top of construction cost estimates is going to be key to help Marcy with the money side. And then transit mode shift. How well can we get folks to be choice, what we call choice riders on transit, meaning it's convenient and it's attractive enough for them to get out of their vehicle and affect mobility on the network. So those are our challenges and opportunities.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. Good morning. Our town administrator and all of our department heads have alluded to the complex web of regulatory and legal challenges that they face, and certainly legal spends a good part of days involved in those and navigating those. But I'll present to you 5 things that are prominent right now that you'll be hearing from us more about in the next few months. First is the shifting insurance coverage requirements, SMERF, and challenges they are presenting us with. As you're aware, we do have some specific areas of our insurance coverage that are unique to the town. Second is the increase in land use litigation. At this point, at this stage, it's mostly related to appeals, administrative appeals from our various boards and commissions. That is somewhat related to changes in town policy, impact fees, trees, permits probably in the future, vested rights, and things of that nature. Third is an exponential increase in FOIA. So far this year, we have over 350 requests, and that number grows every year. Fourth, significant legislative proposals brought forth in our state. We're seeing some heavy-handed proposals and legislation that would severely penalize municipalities and counties that we monitor all of the time. And fifth is continuing educating our boards and commissions regarding procedure to keep us in line with our strict and often changing FOIA regulations. Thank you.
Thank you, Linda Fies. Is that everybody?
Yeah.
Okay. I know council's got some questions or remarks, so we will do that and be clean as we can as far as procedures, but I'll start with you. I was keeping a list. I got about six questions.
Yeah.
Yes, so are you going to report to us on? No. Councilman Musa, do you have a report?
Yeah, I just have a couple of comments to make. And I want to wait until the end here to make comments. I want to thank Jeff Ullman for all that he's done and certainly all the department heads. But there's a point that he made that I think is very significant. And that's the rebuilding of Mount Pleasant. Here in 5 years, we'll probably reach the point that we built out. But then we will start again in some part, the old part of Mount Pleasant probably, and it's already begun, which is going to be the rebuilding of Mount Pleasant. Old houses are being torn down and new houses are being built. So I think we're finishing the building phase, but we're beginning the rebuilding phase. And I think the rebuilding phase of Mount Pleasant is going to be very important because I think it's my observation that rebuilding a house, tearing a house down and then rebuilding a house is more of a complicated process than a straightforward house that is rebuilt. So you see houses that are partially torn down, completely torn down, but they're all rebuilt. They're all having to follow changing regulations. So as we move from one phase to the other, I think planning is going to become more difficult. The second thing, as we've talked about all this, is we've heard talk about being self-sufficient. Of course, I've preached that for a long time. Even going back to Hungry Man Boulevard, you know, the theme was we're going to be self-sufficient. And the point I'd like to make is this is our town. I don't think we have to kowtow to the state or county or federal government. This is our town. We're elected. We're making decisions. And we should do what we feel is best for our town. In return, we can't blame the county, blame the state or the federal government for anything that goes wrong. Because it's my observation that if the county does something that causes something to go wrong in our town, we're still getting the blame. So we may as well, and I firmly believe this, do what we think is best for the town and not be hamstrung by what other levels of government think we should do or may say we can't do. So I just want to put that up front as we're looking for the vision for Mount Pleasant. We're responsible for everything we do and everything we fail to get done. Thank you.
Thank you. Others?
Yes, Captain.
Kathy Simon sitting here with somebody that will. I just want to say thank you so much to all the department heads and also to all of the folks, all the staff who do the job every day. This is one of those lofty kind of statements, but I'm going to say it anyway. Eric started out with the whole introduction of you folks sharing with us about the disarray at the federal level. So I'm just going to say that I believe there should be a requirement that in the absence of a budget and the need for continuing resolutions, it is the senators and the representatives who should go without a paycheck, not the essential workers such as TSA and Border Security, who are treated almost like pawns in the process. They continue to do their jobs and the Congress is not. I say this in this meeting today to stress that as council, we will not allow this type of disarray to affect our ability to work together to solve problems. And besides, our town is required to have a balanced budget. So thank you again, all of you, for all the dedication you show every day.
Just to follow up on week before, it seems to be I bring something up again, 15 people coming at me, so sometimes I don't get to complete what I was saying. I heard Mrs. Kotov mention the technology strategic plan. I was speaking to Jeff about the comprehensive plan process. We spent $400,000 to have a consultant come in. There are places that do it in-house. So I think all those 400 here and 70,000 there for consulting is an opportunity to rein in some spending. You know, it seems like an endless stream of RFPs and consulting. And I'm not saying go over the staff, but maybe the staff could do it for less. You can even think outside the box. Give someone a bonus who's qualified to do something. Say, hey, in the next 6 months, could you write up a 10-pager on this topic? And give them half of what we're paying the consultant. They get a bonus without laying out the money to the consultant. These are thinking outside the box issues. Spend a lot of money on studies. I'm not sure all of them are necessary. It's something just to think about. I'd also like to thank the department heads that are here. And I see, you know, it's once you're inside and see what they do, I mean, you have some demanding jobs and you do a great job. And I don't want anything I say to be misconstrued. I know some political people would like to turn around and say, oh, you're hurting the morale of the fire department. I've heard that nonsense before. That has nothing to do with it. If anything, having my background in that field, I get people reaching out that maybe aren't reaching out to the rest of the council because they know they can speak to me about things and how they are. So I'd like to thank the chiefs and the directors of the departments for all the hard work. And when you look at the grand scheme of Mount Pleasant, yes, Gary, this is Mount Pleasant. You know, I think our police department needs to be Mount Pleasant, and our fire department needs to be Mount Pleasant as much as this magazine needs to be Mount Pleasant. And sometimes, when you look back on the grand plans of what happened in the past, do you just bring that slide from the air that I asked you to? Okay. Has the population of Mount Pleasant going up and the fire apparatus going down? How does that ever happen if we have a great plan? I don't know. I mean, I know they were shifted to another role, but how we grow and the fire department response to capacity shrinks is just mind-boggling to me. And I don't want to point out nickels and dimes, but ultimately that comes down to making it a priority and making it the best it can be, and at least meeting the minimum standards. We pay out for accreditation, and we're looking to expand on that. We're going to accredit everybody. Everybody's going to be accredited. But then we ignore a worldwide standard of where we should be. It's like we're going to hide behind accreditation and ignore a worldwide standard. And I also heard with accreditation, maybe I could ask the chief of the fire department to elaborate upon this, that these accreditation teams come in, they give a written report, but they also give a little whisper. Hey, we didn't really like this, or hey, we didn't really like that. If we're paying for that process, there should be no whispers. We should get it in writing. And I had people in the fire department tell me that they didn't like the fact that there's no ladder truck on 6 Mile. I said, well, where is it in writing? Oh, they just told us that verbally. Well, that's really a waste of our money if we're not getting it official, if somebody's putting their name on it. So just throwing that out there, thank you for the time.
Thank you. Well, we've got to be doing something right now because everybody wants to move here, right? And that's really attributed to the work that the department heads and all staff do every day. And I just want to go on the record for congratulating each of you. There's not a moment that goes by that if I get a call from a citizen that I can't reach out to you. And your response is always, I'm on. I forget about it because I know our capable staff and our department heads are on it. And they stay on it until it's completed. We wouldn't have the community that we have and people want to, that are drawn here to Mount Pleasant. We've always been a welcoming community. But it's because of you. And certainly not because of this council. It's because of staff, the work that you do, the commitment that you have, the day-to-day performance that you provide all of our citizens. It's just commendable, and really appreciate all that you do. I could go around this room and point out a number of topics and discussions that we've had, each of the department heads, on a daily basis. And you all have done this town proud. And I know that all of council appreciates all of your hard work. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I just want to echo Jill's comments. I think it's clear to be in the community where people want to be and are happy to be here and feel like they're well served. To the start of the heads and our administrator, I think excellence starts at the top. The expectation starts at the top and works to go through an organization. And Eric, I know you're always not willing to take any credit for this, but I think you do need to at least acknowledge that you have assembled a good team, a great team, and have supervised them in a way to set the expectation of excellence. And they have responded. And like Mr. Owens, I've never been told by the department head here that it can't be something can't be done or won't be done. We're going to try our best to do it. And I appreciate that. I think the citizens appreciate that as well. I think as a council, our responsibility here is to make sure that we provide our staff with a plan, what our priorities are. We resource them appropriately, and we do our best to see either way so they can do the job. I think we can do that as a council, to the best of our ability. We will see more and more accomplishment and success from our staff. So I think we have a role in this as well, but it's something, congratulations to all of our staffs. Lived here for over 20 years, 25 years, and it's a great place to live. Thank you all for your hard work. Thank you, sir.
I'd just like to do that. With both of my colleagues and both staff. We've got a great staff. I've been here going on 20 years now, and I think our staff's done a tremendous job. And once again, I mentioned that we are Mount Pleasant, and I didn't mean that to slant anybody else, Kevin. I didn't mean that to slant, you know, any place or anybody came from. It's just that I'm very proud of my town. I'm very proud of where we've come from and where we're at right now and the people who work here. And once again, I just want to touch base quickly. We talked about revenues and, you know, Jody brought up about the turf fields. I think we talked about, Jody, when we talked about the cost savings of turf fields, was about, what, $29,000 a year?
A little less
than $29,000 a year that we could save if we were able to put the turf fields in. So it's definitely a savings, and that's why I want to take a really comprehensive look at what we're doing, because I think there are ways that we can not only make extra revenue, but also save some costs that can help. You know, because if our guys don't have to cut the grass and put down the pesticide and fertilizer and all that, maybe they could help with some of the drainage issues we have. You know, they could be dispersed to other areas of the town without having to hire new people to help in some other areas. So that's one of the reasons I want to really take a good look at this and see how it benefits the town. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Mr. O'Rourke.
Brad. I'm not on the transportation committee, so maybe this question isn't a great one, but if somebody said to me, what's the worst issue in the town right now, I'd say it was traffic. And there just seems to be so many people that are affected by traffic issues. So what discussions are being held? And I know it can't just be a Mount Pleasant discussion, it has to be a regional discussion about relief for 20 years from now, 30 years from now. Are those discussions going on anywhere? Is there a...
They're on the contest of transit.
Okay, so one of the things you said that is good is, you know, we've got to figure out how we can make it more efficient, how to maybe get out of cars and do things like that, which is good. But I just...
When it's all so much, it will be able to build and readily work here. We realize that, and we have to start relying on other methods.
So it's going to get worse.
Well, it's an interim until we probably need our build-out of our ultimate plan, because that plan is supposed to be able to support the majority of our needs. But then for transit, there's a regional transit framework plan that's included by the BC. Its first outlay of funding is going to be from Somerville and downtown. But it recognizes 17 and Mount Pleasant as another likely application of what we call bus route BRT. Bus traffic transit. So, that's three words, a lot of money for something like that. But it's now, at least it looks realistic in the fact that they're talking about ways to fund that in the next 20, 25 years.
If I could jump in, yeah, I attended the meeting Monday, and that long range plan eventually, I think, Mount Pleasant's on that. Were we fourth or fifth in line on that? Somerville
and Charleston Street,
I think, on that board. Even 34, yeah. We're down on $25 million per mile, and the estimated ridership for that BRT from Mount Pleasant is 3,400 people a day. We could carpool them with Lyft for cheaper. And so the transportation service, there is no silver bullet
yet.
There's not one. I don't know the answer for that. It's like affordable housing. You know, it's the urban paradox. I know there's intelligent life somewhere in the universe, but why haven't we found it? Nobody saw affordable housing. Nobody has really saw transportation. So I'm not sure, you know, what the answer to that is. Yes, sir.
Just real quickly, as we talk about man or staff and everything, and I don't know if everyone knows this, but there was a time in Mount Pleasant where the police department, with every 8,000 people,
right,
came into Mount Pleasant. Another officer, two officers were authorized automatically. Didn't matter. Well, we got to a point, and Chief Perry was the one we on council discovered it wasn't sustainable. And he said, well, you know what? We're going to concentrate on quality rather than quantity. And I think our police department has shown that principle works, and our crime rate's going down, and things are going well. And I think the town has done a great job of concentrating on quality rather than quantity. Now, does that mean that any department can't be overwhelmed at some point?
Sure.
But, you know, I think we've done a good job of getting quality people to work here at the town, and to a great degree, I think that has ceased. And like I said, it all started, you got to ask Chief about that. The standard was 8,000. I think it was 8,000.
And that's sure it was 2 per 1,000.
2 per 1,000.
Wow.
And that's and there was no discussion. Every time the population went up that way, they hired 2 officers. So anyway, again, thanks to the staff. Quality helps.
It's an experience, that's what's happening now. And so we based on the call for service and response time, so it's not a magic formula. That's what we had in the district, determining what our call line was, our response time was, to make sure we were getting responding. For example, some of the agency came on, came out of council, and we had additional people. So we're constantly reviewing that data to make sure we have the right staff and we're going to have calls.
Is your staffing something you can tell us to speak publicly about? The numbers, what you put on the uniform jam, or is that something?
Yes, so we're authorized 166. I currently have 10 in some form of training right now, actually in-house. that get ready to hire some more. And all of them are going to be involved in our staffing. We'll be at Del Webster. As you know, it takes time to get trained. And then we've got some closure times. And it's always, I'm never at 166 because of attrition. And we seem to retain very well. We've got folks that get a long time to retire and move on. But again, get that active one will continue.
While you're in the microphone, yes, one of my questions on the list was, I heard, who were we talking with the other day about the police cabins and the need for some increased capacity or facility in the low country? So that was one of my things, because next week we're at the legislature, I think all of us know. Is there a discussion at the state level of opening another police training academy? Because, you know, there's two pockets of growth in the state.
Yes, sir, I'm glad to address that.
That would be super.
Actually, this has been a discussion that probably started 12 years ago about regional academies, recognizing that, that we should have some type of decentralized academy, not just a Columbia. That fell by the wayside, but that conversation started again. And I'll tell you why. It's against a statewide problem. Some of the folks I was talking to Mr. Kinney about that I had hired, I heard that in August. I'm an academy district made for them. So we're doing our pre-academy, we're going through our field training, and then we get into the academy, and we'll probably get back. But one of the issues, obviously, was the academy didn't have any line item budget. They were depending on fines and fees. Now, they heard some more talk about fines and fees. There's never a stable, it's up and down. And that caused the academy to have an issue with instructors not being able to, the waiting time took them all over us to get our officers in. Again, Chief of Sheriff from across the state met a couple of weeks ago, and we let our director of the academy know it's not working. What can we do to help you? We want to tackle the academy. How can we help this backlog so we can get our officers trained? Good, healthy discussion. Many of us, especially in the local country, including myself, led up to the budget hearing, and we spoke in favor of getting the academy together funded. But take a step further. And Mayor, this was just last week. I was actually picked to be part of the state, part of the academy review committee for the state, specifically for the water agencies in the low country. And we all met the academy last week. There's a proposal where the currently academy is 12 weeks. And we said we're going to be able to take 4 weeks of that academy, to get the curriculum for us, and we'll be able to train our officers in-house for that 4 weeks. With our academy certified instructors, so we're not watering down what we're getting. I think we're actually improving some of the quality of training we're getting. And not just at each agency, one of the demands from our academy is from the bigger agencies like ourselves, Charleston City, or Charleston County, and then Greenville, all that. Don't forget the little agencies. Well, I never called Charleston the other day. They've already got five ready to come and sit in our classroom here. I had state probation control, which I could just name. So we're also gathering in smaller agencies in the system. We complete that 4 weeks. They go back to the academy for a cumulative test. They pass that test, and they'll immediately get an academy day. It'll be either within 2 weeks to finish the last 8 weeks of the mandatory state training. What that does there, where the academy is anticipating on a double add additional 300 to 500 academy slots. But with us, there also comes some of these other agencies where they told me, let's say Columbia County student. Physical agility testing. When they send someone they can't pass, well, that's the slot that was taken. So I got to wait another 4 weeks to try to get that spot. And then we get 70 students in a class, graduating 45, recognizing they weren't past the PhD, they weren't past the farm, or they couldn't pass academically. So we're working on that to make sure there's testing on the funding for the undergraduate academy, so these coming slots will fill the right people. So there's some really positive work going on. Why, I just got an email from the academy sitting here. They're rolling out to all the agencies now from what our committee recommended. And they'll get done to fill out a survey, and then hopefully we'll be able to get the school for July 1. I think it's making a big impact of getting more men working on the street. That's not pleasant for statewide.
Do we need to be, do we need help from our state legislators on this? Is there a bill or a funding proposal or anything?
No, sir, I don't think it's tough. Okay. I actually spoke with the snakes. I happened to run into her while I was in Columbia, and she mentioned she was preparing to refile. And I actually waited. I thought, I think we want to choose the sheriffs, but we're in a good place.
Okay.
We're doing good work together. We identified the problem, but we came up with a solution. And I think that solution is otherwise than it's going to work out. If we need that sort of thing between all the sheriffs who have the support like we have here, we have that solution, or that could be introduced. I think the way it's written out, we're in good shape. I think it's going to happen for us. So, yes, sir.
Thank you. Yes, sir. This is for Steve. The discussion base has been a lot about money and things like that. And it goes for somebody that doesn't know math very well or isn't very smart. An analogy that Mr. Bush just gave that I love is the average house costs $1,300 to service, we get $5. I can understand. Have we ever in the rec department done any work on costs? For example, GM mentioned $50 to pay $2 a deal. There's probably people in this town that don't think $50 is a deal. So we're servicing a lot of different people. But do we know that if somebody's playing soccer in the town of Mount Pleasant and they pay $50, what the real cost is for that person to do it? And I say that for two reasons. One, I'm kind of pretty good with subsidizing our own people, at least first. But when we talk about outside groups and outside people using our facilities, I'm not so sure that I'm in favor of great deals with that. So I guess the question comes down to cost as we talk about money. Do we have a really good feel for knowing costs this much money per person to run a soccer program, to run a baseball program, to run summer camp, to run this, other things?
We have a lot of data for regional programs that are doing expenses for each one of them. And they are different per program. It's not the same for each one program. You certainly spend much more on football than you do on a soccer program. Number of officials and then you put in everything that goes on with that. So at following each program, we have information on the direct cost. So I have all kinds of data that I can provide on direct cost. It is much more difficult and you know, I guess, the answer. You know the total cost. If you were to break down the cost of public services, the cost of the field, the return on investment for the facility itself, everything that goes into it, administrative functions and everything else that everyone's supporting in an area, we do not have a cost like that for each one of our programs. There are only direct costs to do.
I don't mean today, tomorrow, or next month, but it probably wouldn't be a bad idea, especially since Jody came up with two of the things that he talked about were about maintenance of the fields. And that is a cost. So it would be good for us to know what these true costs are, so we will be able to know what we are subsidizing and what we are not. That's just a comment.
And if I may, that's my first question. Why are we putting maintenance and recreation fields in the public services budget? It's not reflective. I mean, it ought to be, to me, in the recreation, that's a recreation function. It's not streets and drainage and garbage and all that, but yet it's in the public development hall. It's in the public services budget. And it seems like if we're going to truly reflect where the cost centers are, that's a recreation cost center. Cutting a ball field is different from cleaning a storm drain. And we're carrying that cost in your budget, but it's a recreation cost. I've never really understood that. Which leads me to some, are you finished on that?
I have a comment on that. Sure. And then I'll stop. But where it lies in the budget, and how we account for it, it may be easier if the workers managed by public services or the public service budget. But what I do think could be done is to know, as we can do this, what is the actual cost, and the cost of that go to the recreation thing. So I could probably win both arguments on that. I think it would be tough if Jody started looking at the people that he managed being over in the recreation budget, but the cost for his work to recreation, I think, should be accountable for. So. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
Let me reduce that cost if we had turf fields.
All right. I have a few questions. One is, and I guess this is for Marcy. This is one of those outside influences, outside things. But it seems to me, I don't have the empirical evidence, but anecdotally, it seems that the cost of capital projects in the Lowcountry, especially if it involved pavement and engineering and things,
are higher than they are in other parts of the state. Maybe it's a demand and supply thing or whatever, but when you look at some of the costs per mile of projects that you see around here, it doesn't seem to be that high in other parts of the state. Yes, we got wetlands. Yes, you know, we have some engineering things and drainage issues, but is this something that is going to be an impediment to capital projects down the way? Is it cost more? Everything costs more in this part of the state.
Yes, sir. We're seeing that when we have a project that goes out for bid, for whatever reason we have to rebid it, just a couple months can cost us 20-30% more. We've actually seen that
percent more?
Yes, sir. So one of the things that we do when we rank our CIP, one of the criteria is there more than normal cost for delay? So if a project, if it has pavement, we usually give out a higher mark, score it higher, because we know the longer we delay, the higher the costs are actually coming in.
Okay, so I don't know if there is a way to manage that better. I mean, I'm not saying we're not managing it right. It's kind of like the chief's thing about the academy. You know, is there a way that we can put our heads together as a region and say we're getting taken to the cleaners on capital projects? Everybody knows this one. You know, one of the jokes I make, you can call a plumber and ask him how much to fix a bathtub or a toilet, and you tell him you only have a pump to shovel his on, and they go, that, you want that price. Well, I think, you know, the low country, we're getting a little bit of the same treatment on this stuff. I don't know if that's reflected in our drainage things. Charleston would probably, you know, they're looking at a bigger nut than we are on that. But it's just something that if there is a way that we can find a way to mitigate that or get better deals. I don't know. Maybe the contractors need more competition. It seems like what was announced at Chats the other day, Tom, it seems like there's one big contractor that seems to get all the road jobs in the whole country. You know, is that a monopoly? Probably not legally, but it might be from a practical standpoint. Did you know that?
Yeah, I just wanted to add what you were saying. You're talking about paying contractors, and there's a handful of paving contractors that actually can do large work in the area. But to get to your point, as far as bringing costs down, I know that we have our in-house engineers who certainly put a cost on any kind of capital projects that we have. And so we need to make a determination on what percentage we're willing to be above that estimate or if we're willing to be above it at all.
Right.
If it doesn't get filled, if it's bid and it's well above that, you know, 10%, 30% above that, maybe we look at doing it on another day.
Yes.
That's exactly the point. And one thing that we started doing is a different procurement method than we utilized in the past. If so, thank you, Barbara.
Is that, you know, traditionally our bid process has been what you all know, right? You know, designing and bidding and building it. And what we've done now, and a lot of us have done around the procurement code, is to go out and competitively select a contractor and bring them in on front. So where the competition starts on the front end, and then they're brought into our development process, where they can be working directly with us as an advocate to try to achieve another price. It's better for bricks and mortar buildings. It is not, it's much tougher on road projects, which is really probably most of what you're talking about, because those are the numbers that, and not really estimated, as you know very well, $7 million or so just for the widening part of the pool. That's only a mile and a half. So we're, I think we would be better on bricks and mortar, vertical construction, but the trouble still works.
This may be, and maybe we are now in a segue into the part about the vision, but I feel it also relates very much to what Brad said and where this conversation seems to be going. So one of the areas that Brad brought up, which is extremely important, which I think all council agrees, I know Aaron has talked about it a lot, is that when you look at big projects and big problems, and things like 526 completion taking years and years and years just to get to the point of saying, yes, we're going to pay for it and this is how we're going to do it. And we look at 41, And those of us that drive 41 every single day and sometimes find it as a multiple day, we all, I believe, would agree that if you could just add, and I can affirm it again this morning, if you could just continue the southbound second lane all the way down to 17, it would have a huge impact short term. And I don't know anything about road construction, so I don't know how long it would take to do that, but I have to believe it would take a lot less than an objective 2026 for the entire project. I had a serendipitous meeting the other day with Jim Armstrong, Deputy County Administrator, Transportation Public Works, who all of you, I mean, a couple of you know very well. And he said, we chatted about this, and he said, and by the way, he is the one that would be over Seafic and Calaway, who are heading to the 41 project. And I mentioned two things. I mentioned this. I said, the town really wants this. Isn't this something we could move ahead quicker? And then in regard to NEPA studies, which in that area does not affect the Phillips community, it only affects the Horlbeck Creek, I believe you'd call it overpass. I said, what if, according to what I know from Brad, we have enough land and room there to create that one more lane without having to either build a bridge or add more earthen works or something that would cause a lot of problems in the NEPA study asset. And he said, yes, you're right. And so the question is, how do you then push through and say, okay, well, let's just get going. Exactly. If we could break some ground, right, people would be so happy.
That's what we endorse.
Yes.
And that's what the Calaway told us they're working on, and it is acceptable under the parameters. Correct me if I'm wrong, but we're correct. That's that interim thing that falls within the project. So we expect to see that, and they said they could do that in a matter of what. As opposed to 4 or 5.
18 months is what?
18 months. 18 months is what they're saying. Because you're absolutely right.
That would be so huge.
Yeah.
People can see that happen.
Yeah, I'm going to move on down my list. Nobody else needs anything. Fire department, medical calls. Who did I see recently? Is it the city of Charleston or somebody who's changing their response to medical calls? And I forget the numbers in my head, but I know our responses to medical calls are in the thousands, and to actual fires are in the low hundreds. Not criticizing our policy or our response, but in the profession down the road, the fire department still going to handle that?
Yes, sir. And we get over 5,000 medical calls last year. And that's something that we talk more about is where can we reach back and still provide that level of customer service. The North Charleston Charleston model for Mount Pleasant, we feel is a little overreach in what we would go to. But we're looking at calls where we really wouldn't have an impact. These interfacility transfers, we call the doctor's care, just really stand out for an ambulance. Some of the psychiatric models are changing. There's a lot of calls each day for suicidal patients. But if they're not really threatened or having harm themselves, you know, we don't want to dump a lot of people there anyway. So changing some of the models, and looking at what we think, we could probably do 7 to 9% a year for total call line. If we cut back on some of those areas, we're not going to make a huge difference. So we're looking at that since we partner with EMS, but we're not going to go as far as Charleston or the city because we still want to provide that Mount Pleasant level of care. And we're also paramedics, which they're not. So we can do a lot of interventions before EMS arrives, and those other departments can do.
And in a nutshell, what have they done? What changes did they make? The other call.
Right, so there's call types, so Alpha, Bravo, Charlie. Alpha's the least threatening, Echo's the greatest. They've cut back a lot of those Alpha, Bravo calls for falls, for animal bites, for things of that nature, and they're just going to let EMS handle them. You can also build in a time component in the computer dispatch system to where if it's going to take EMS greater than 10 minutes on any call, the fire department still gets dispatched. So we're looking at that too. Really, where we're not going to affect the patient outcome. And we don't want to leave anybody that fell sitting on the floor for 20 minutes while they wait on EMS. But really, things that we're not making a difference, so we'll come back.
Yes, sir. Just a quick follow-up, Chief. Because calls to medical facilities, is there any way to tell if you take those out of the system? If somebody's there with medical training, like a nurse, a doctor, or whatever, paramedics are great, but you don't need it for somebody that's up.
True, yeah, I agree. Unless it's something serious like a full arrest or a severe respiratory emergency where they're going to need that fire department paramedic level support, Yeah, but they don't need to be there. If they're going to transfer for a headache or just general pain, then the fire department's not going to do anything that the nurse or the doctor's not going to do.
And we can give that non-pleasant level of care to the police officer in some cases. They're going to be there anyway. Chief, aren't they? You know, if the ambulance is on their way, why are we taking our fire apparatus out of service?
And that's kind of a similar model for the psychiatric type patients. Police are going to be there because they generally have to clear the scene, and then EMS comes in. Adding that fire department component, I believe sometimes that takes the patient because that's just three or four more bodies standing there looking at them and assessing them. So we're looking at that too for the psychiatric type call model.
Gotcha.
Good. So, yeah, just a quick question. I know when I was chairman of the fire committee, we bought some SUVs, and we started dispatching those instead of fire trucks. Are we still doing that?
Yes, sir. We currently have two squads. They handled together a little over 3,000 calls last year. The one that's on Bowman Road is kind of in that nursing care facility corridor, and the other one's on 6 Mile.
So we don't have a fire truck going every one of them. We have those going.
Correct. Yeah. 3,000 calls. Those two units picked up last year. Majority of them are medical, but they will go to fires as a kind of secondary crew to assist, but they're where they were located, the majority of the medical calls.
I can tell you, we had a situation one time where I had to call 911, and the fire department was there much quicker than the ambulance, and they were able to stabilize my ex-wife. And I can tell you what, when you're in a situation like that, and you don't know really what's going on, our fire department is always the first ones there. And I tell you what, it was such a relief. They had already stabilized her by the time the ambulance got there. So with the two ambulances, I think it served Mount Pleasant or somewhere. It is relief when you call 911 and the fire department shows up. Somebody from the fire department is paramedic and takes care of the situation as quickly as possible. So I love the fact that you guys do that. And I understand you have to look at each situation, but certainly you guys get there first. And now that we have the SUVs, instead of sending a ladder truck, you know, out to something like that, I think helps tremendously as well.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Yeah, there's really a gamut though, Gary. I mean, you wouldn't believe what some people call 911 for. I mean, it is, I could give you stories all day long. And there is a pecking order, and the 911 dispatchers can rank a cardiac versus a nosebleed. And that's the difference. I mean, we our fire department is inadequately set for buildings we have in the sound period. So to take them away from being available for a subtel or a nosebleed, probably really bad move in the grand scheme of things. But when you talk about those two squads, that's the middle of town. On the further reaches, you're sending an apparatus, correct, Chief?
Yes, sir. General.
So that's one thing for a cardiac. One thing when there's actually going to be an intervention. But doctor's offices and minor injuries, some people like to use ambulances as taxis. If that's the case, let them wait for the ambulance in a new car department.
We can't transport anything.
No, I know, but people call 911 because they don't want to pay their doctor for their common cold. They want to go to the ER. This goes on, and that's the type of thing we don't need to be sending a fire truck or firefighter, period, to go to that stuff.
My next question, Brad, talking about the adaptive traffic signals, do those get overloaded sometimes? Because I'll give you an example. Atmosphere, Houston, North Pet, 17. It happens regularly that I'm sitting there and the left turn arrow comes on, one car makes it through and it immediately changes. And I think that's a staff problem, a personnel problem. It sounds like a software issue or a sensor issue or something. And then there's places around town where you get the green light, two cars get through, the next thing you know, it's going the other. And you're saying, yeah, okay. So is there something we can do? Because our system was it not, was traffic much less when it was implemented or something?
It's adaptive. It's adaptive to a certain point where, just like any signal system, or let's just talk about an intersection, it has a finite capacity. So even adaptive doesn't gain you necessarily anything during these peak periods. Now, what you're talking about could be a detection issue, meaning it's not for all the signal, but often during the peaks, when you're moving nearly 3,000 vehicles in one direction to the signal, the signature is going to suffer, particularly during the peaks. And we do them in good sense. I get calls, and I welcome these types of calls because there could be something wrong. But we are continually, James is continually looking at, hey, you know, and I'll pass on these things. Like, I saw something here that may not be right, or whatever. Looking at those types of things to where we can adjust, but also know that there might be something wrong. So if you have a comment, a specific area, call me up and let me know.
Okay, sounds good.
I think I did that very thing earlier this week at the intersection of Coleman and Simmons.
Correct. Could, you know, once again, detection's not working correctly, signal's not, you know, act correctly.
Mm-hmm. But my other point on this, and this section is assessment of current and future conditions, and then we get to the vision part afterwards, and I think this will be a big part of that. But we have situations where we have set a course, or a previous council has set a course on a capital project, and then something that we were rating them off that day would come in higher. And there's a frustration on my part that, I mean, we don't even pause a long-term capital project when something comes in that we have to say, hey, wait a minute, we didn't foresee this. But it would almost be like if you were planning a cruise to Europe, and then somebody in your family needed, you know, surgery or something like that, and you say, wait a minute, doesn't mean we'll never do this, but right now this is a higher priority. And I know capital projects, there's design phase and there's bidding and all that stuff, but sometimes things come along that are higher. And if we had a way to do that, it's our job, it's not staff's job, but it's our job to say, you know, right now for the people in Mount Pleasant, this is a much higher priority, so this one needs to, you know, put the yellow light on or whatever. And I know some staff are probably not happy to hear that. But and I'll just tell you one that I'm thinking about. I think things that we should do to save our shrimping fleet right now are higher priority than building a generic marina at the end of this year. That doesn't mean that was always a bad idea, but we didn't have the means, and nobody knew that one of the last functioning capacity shrimp docks was going to come available, and our people, I believe, want us to play a role in that. So if we get to this vision thing, one is the funding, and two is what do we do when needs change? I mean, let's say, for instance, and it was out of reach, but let's say getting Highway 41 fixed had been within our grasp financially. We don't just drop things and go through new capital projects on a whim. But what if that referendum had not passed, the county referendum? I don't think we'd be talking about any capital projects in this town except Highway 41 right now. And so if there's a way, when we get to that next section, we can think about that. And then when we talk about funding, let's think about the ways, there's got to be a matrix, and maybe y'all have this at parks. You know, you don't just go and buy here and there, you look around, what have we done geographically for our area, have we been fair to everybody, and what's the way to prioritize? The schools don't do that all the time. So that's something I'd like us to look at. And the other thing, and this is getting down to the personnel level, but having just finished my rookie season in this office, I had no idea of the number of calls that the clerk of council, your clerk, gets. Even right down to, she's trying to go out the door sometimes to our council meeting, and people are calling her to debate what's on the agenda. Citizens are. And Eric, I don't know if we've ever looked at having an ombudsman. I'm not trying to create positions or whatever, but the clerk of council works for 9 of us and reports to someone else. And it's given with the growth of our town and the engaged citizenry, which is part of our strategic plan, where one person cannot field and handle all of those calls, and then we all read in the letters to the editor, well, I call town hall and I can get, well, yeah, you get a response, but the response doesn't necessarily come from one councilman or me or anybody else. It goes to whoever's supposed to handle that. And I don't know if all those calls are logged into our software or whatever, but it is a growing number of
calls from important down to the mundane. And I think other municipalities outside has a staff member whose job it is to do that, and it's probably not the clerk of council. So we need to look at that as we look at our staffing and our budget. Because we want, there's a level of service people expect from their elected officials as well, and as well as their staff. So, Eric, I don't know if we've ever had an ombudsman position or what, but I really don't think that all those calls are meant to be the purview of the clerk of council.
No, sir, we haven't, and happy to look at it. One of the troubles with it is that we have to really mold it properly, because typically a lot of those questions end up on my desk anyway.
Right.
You know, so what that person ends up being is a courier of questions to only get responses from me or department managers or something like that. So, you know, yes, we certainly could, and it's up to y'all.
Just on that same topic, Mr. Mayor, we have three security guards and we have a desk sitting there. I suggested that we try and rotate the experts down into that desk maybe one day a week, you know, and make that the entry point for everything. We have receptionists in every department. These buildings 50 times higher, bigger than, maybe not 50 times higher, but a lot higher than Town Hall, that have a centralized receptionist that handles it. We did that and empowered them with the ability to answer questions for the town. It would relieve everyone else. And a lot of the questions are just, hey, what floor is the business office on? You know, do I need to file this? And there's experts. Everybody's an expert in their own department. And you got to give them more credit than they get, that they know about the operations of the town better than all nine of us put together. So we put those proper people there right in the lobby and empower them with the ability to answer some of those questions. It'll free up questions to get into Eric and Christine.
Are you talking about telephone calls or just walking in there?
Well, both.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it could be done both. And you can probably free up some office space upstairs for the leasing program, too.
Just to piggyback on the discussion, is there been an opportunity to cross-train staff to take some of the workload off of the clerk and distribute it to somebody up front or another administration personnel that we've already got?
I'd have to sort of defer more to learn exactly the nature of the call and what it is. But perhaps we have two receptionists in town. One that sits downstairs to greet people and one outside the executive office. Maybe we've got to sort of look for personnel attributes to be able to answer those kinds of questions and see what the clerk is dealing with. But I mean, we're all busy too. It's every department, it's every level. So I'd have to sit in this back.
I'll just sit ball and I'm just talking about suggestions.
Well, one of the realities, and I don't know if any of y'all look at Nextdoor app, but people are raising more and more questions. And I think the whole, it's not a game, but what do you want to call it, dynamic of an engaged public is vastly different than it was 5 or 10 years ago. And it's everything from coyotes to garbage pickup to noise to short-term rentals and citizens get engaged in groups and then somebody wants answers from town hall. And I think y'all experience what I have. You answer one question in some of these forums and you get 10 more. And it's almost like once you go down there, you are trying to answer a question, but you get so many more, you can't keep up. I know I can't. I certainly can. So then if we had a very clear path to get answers from town hall that is not, weigh on the clerk who has other defined duties to try to handle your call, I think we would get better service and maybe be more efficient about it. But you have a point.
Yeah, probably shouldn't say this, but those sites are driving me crazy.
Yeah.
And there's 200 idiots, and there's 87,000 people that live in this town. And if we're going to let these people to think they're not getting service, they have nothing to do but sit there at night and play on their computer. And I think that I think that we should solve real problems. Not sure if this one is a real problem, quite frankly. And I've seen ombudsman work, and they usually walk in down the hall to the department chair that asked to answer the question anyway. If we could, I'm going to get a lot of calls. But I just hope we don't let these social media sites with dictate what in the world we're going to
do. Yeah, some of them will try. I didn't even get that question, but the call volume is what it is, regardless of what
yeah.
Internet
is. Yeah.
Somebody else? Anything else on this part of the agenda? All right, so that would bring us to item 6, and it's 20 to 12 is lunch here. They're setting up. All right. What time will they be ready? Well, we don't want to get into the next thing and have to break in 10 minutes. So I think we should go ahead and assess and eat, and then what time shall we reconvene?
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
I don't know if you're amenable to it, but number 7 can be discussed in 3 minutes and cut off time at the end of the day.
That's a good one.
Would you like to make a motion on the agenda?
Are we able to amend the agenda or discuss an item out of order?
Yes.
Okay. So what's the prescribed process? Do we have to amend it or just make it up?
I'll just make a motion to amend what we want to do with the majority vote.
Okay. All right.
Motion to amend the agenda to consider item 7 now.
So, wait a minute. It's 8. I believe it's 8.
Oh, yeah. D-I-I is 8.
Correct. Yeah. Item 8. And move that to become the new item 7.
No, D-I-I is 7.
D-I-I.
Oh, it's D-I-I.
It's on the back.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
We're talking about the school zone, right?
Yeah, it should be 5 minutes.
Okay. So we have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Do we need to adjourn? Do we have any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. The agenda is amended. So that brings us to discussion of possible letter to Mobile Duty District 2 concerning Beckman High School zoning and impact of traffic along Long Road and vicinity. Mr. Kinney, I believe you put this on the agenda.
Yes, sir. I was approached by several people that live in the Bell Hall and other areas off Long Point about the Beckman zoning, which is currently being considered by the district. It's not set in stone yet. They reported to me that the island, both Sullivan's and Isle of Palms, have had their local governments advocate for their position on this, and the people in that area would like this body to advocate on their behalf in regards to this. Now, it's not about pitting one neighborhood against the other. I know it was a concern for GM inside Mount Pleasant. This really comes down to a common sense issue of, do we want high school kids that are able to bicycle to school to have that option? And I think it's clear that in this world, the less cars we can have on the road, the better. And a simple letter saying that the town of Mount Pleasant supports the idea of children bicycling to high schools would go a long way here. And I think also the situation on Long Point is clear. It's a failing road. It had the biggest committee turnout I've seen in my time hanging around. People don't want more cars on that road. So if we could just issue a letter that says we would favor bicycle access to Beckham and people that are close along Long Point Road to be considered as part of the Beckham zone, the people in that area would be happy, and I think it would be beneficial to the town's traffic flow overall.
Is that a motion?
Yes.
Second. We have a motion. We have a second discussion. Ms. Whitley, I'd love to hear from you, Chair of Education.
So my initial approach to the zoning was to leave it in the hands of District 2 because we had no jurisdiction over them. But upon being made aware that other municipalities had sort of been advocating on behalf of their residents in order to get them to Beckham, I think it's very, to me it's a no-brainer. They live right next door to Beckham High School. They should be going to Beckham High School. But in the past, I didn't feel that was really my purview to make that statement. But given the actions of other municipalities, I think it is there's no harm in doing this letter and in stating that we want to advocate on behalf of our citizens
for town clerk, and high school is going to be located to recognize that.
All right. Maybe we ask that your committee, you know, be majority limited. Maybe just finalize the wording of that, and we'll circulate the draft. If this motion passes to all council, it can come from the mayor and all council. Is that satisfactory? Comes from all of us?
Yeah, the reason that I'm going to wait for education is it doesn't always meet. And frankly, I'm not chair of anything. I don't have the opportunity to put things on the agenda, so I have to come to council with a lot of things. And I haven't seen an increase, by the way. So either way, as long as it gets out, there's something coming up next week on it that they are concerned about. There's some kind of meeting. I think it's today we're in Columbia. So we can't be a person, but I think having a letter in time for that would be great.
Yes, sir.
I agree. I mean, I think it's a no-brainer. I mean, they ought to be able to ride their bikes. Some of them even walk from Bell Hall area to Moosehead. So I think it's kind of a no-brainer. You're right. I see what other people are giving their two cents, and I think we need to give our two cents as well. I know Tara Nichols, so I think she's the associate or the second in command of the school board. She lives in Mount Pleasant. I think she lives in Longmont, if I'm not mistaken. But clearly, we have to talk to her as well. But it's crazy for me to see or hear them talk about sending these kids all the way up to Longmont High School, and they got passed right by Lucy Beckham.
I'm not sure they have. I want to say, I spoke with the constituent school board last fall when they were talking about this, and just because they're going to Lane Middle does not mean they're going to Wanda. I'm not saying you won't send a letter, but a lot of this, again, is built on social media speculation. The ones I spoke to said they were never considering sending students from Bell Hall to Wanda to drive right past Lucy Beck. We'll send a letter and reiterate that. I spoke to a bunch of them last year. I said, no. Just because you go to Lane does not mean you're automatically going to Wanda.
Yeah. The impression on the islands is that, you know, Isle of Palms has to stick together with Sullivan's Island. I call it like the surfer culture. You know, they're trying to keep everyone together. Doesn't make any sense to have our citizens have all the traffic impacts of the school, have to drive past it every day, and the kids can't go to that school. So it's just simple common sense, really. It's not pitting one against the other. But
I guess what I'm asking is, have you heard anybody on the constituent school board say they intend to send Bell Hall students to Wanda?
No, but I also heard them say they were going to seriously consider the whole zoning issue, and that the people were not happy with the result. They appealed it, and that was denied. So now the same people have another battle on their hands. That they have a junior high battle, now they're having it at high school, and they're asking us to step up and stand up for them, and I think we should do that.
We'll be glad to stand up for them, but I just don't. I've never heard that they were considering sending them to Wanda. Would you all draft the letter, and then we'll come to vote in a minute. Would you all draft the letter in your committee? And,
yes,
we do. Okay. Do we need to circulate it for everybody and have 9 editors of this, or can we get with the committee's letter? Go with the committee's letter? I'm fine with that. That's why we have committees. Okay. All in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Right, the ayes have it, so we'll look for that and we'll get it out. Do we want to put everybody's signature on it? Do we want it to be from council or the mayor, or do we want to get everybody to sign?
We just put your name on there.
Whatever you want. It's by accident, it's council, that's right.
I don't think it's a good idea for us to devise a letter that none of you have seen for your signature just go on online. I just don't think that's a good practice.
Which thing?
I don't know what I'm saying. I know what I'm saying yes to, but I'm saying no to we come up with a letter and just put your names on the bottom of it without me looking at it. I think that's not smart.
Just
from
the mayor.
It's fine. Nobody's really expressing the objection other than what the mayor's saying that he hasn't heard or whatever. I don't know what's in their mind, so I don't know how we heard what someone's thinking. But everybody pretty much agrees. Bicycling to school is a good thing. Keeping cars off at Long Point is a good thing. That's the objective here. It's a traffic-related letter to the school board about their impending zoning decision.
Agreed. All right.
But at the same time, Charleston School District, you know, they have a matrix that they follow, and they have the numbers that they put together as far as where the division is, as far as Wando and Lucy Beckham. So, I mean, you know, that their consideration's got to be just as valid. Know what that is.
All right.
So, I guess we think that is. 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 So.